Well, hey, it's time for Ask the Tech Guys. Micah Sargent has the day off. It's just me, sorry, but I will be joined by Scott Wilkinson. We'll talk home theaters. Johnny Jett, we'll talk traveling like a rock star. We'll also answer questions. It's next, Ask the Tech Guy.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Ask the Tech Guys, episode 1973, recorded Sunday, May 7th, 2023. If it's Tuesday, it must be Belgium. This episode of Ask the Tech Guys is brought to you by Electric E-Bikes. Celebrate your mom and give her all the freedom that comes with a electric e-bike. Visit electricebikes.com to learn more and explore the epic models Electric has to offer. And by AG1 by Athletic Greens. If you're looking for a simpler and cost-effective supplement routine, AG1 gives you a free one-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase of a subscription. Go to athleticgreens.com/tech guy. And by Melissa. More than 10,000 clients worldwide rely on Melissa for full-spectrum data quality and ID verification software. Make sure your customer contact data is up to date. Get started today with 1,000 records cleaned for free at melissa.com/twit. Well, hey, how are you today? It's time for Ask the Tech Guys. But it's just one tech guy this week. Micah, it was hard. Micah's worked for us for 3 or 4 years now, and I don't think he's ever taken a vacation. We finally said, you have to take time off. So Micah's taking a week off, and they said, well, who do you want to work with you? And I said, I like doing the show all by myself like I used to when it was on the radio. So hello, everybody. I'm Leo Laporte, and today we will be answering your questions at call.twit.tv. That's the Zoom. You can do it on your phone. In fact, it works great if you do it on your phone because you know your phone's camera and microphone works so well. And call.twit.tv. You can also do it at the desktop. You can also email us at atg@twit.tv. And I've been given a sheaf of email so I can answer some emails today. But we also have some good news. We are working on a phone number. Did you find a great phone number, John?
I did.
He did. He found a great phone number. Is it going to be an 800 number? 888. It's an 888 number. So we will have an 888 number. They're provisioning it, which means, I guess they're, you know, I don't know, somebody in a network operations center somewhere is flipping some switches. They're provisioning it, and we should have it by next week. So we'll give out that number as soon as somebody's there to answer it. Unfortunately, the way it's probably going to work is only one person at a time. It's not a radio station number. Radio stations have special phone lines where big trunk lines where many, many people can call in, and they'll all get in. That's why, you know, Kim Schaffer used to answer the calls and put you on hold. We had 6 lines available, but you could have many, many more. It's expensive. And it's also kind of old school. It's a little old times. Crimson and Clover, that's the song. Not Incense and Peppermints. Thank you very much for fixing that. I was talking before the show about the best version of Incense and Peppermints was Joan Jett's, and it wasn't. It was Crimson and Clover. Another fine pairing. Another good thing to combine. everybody has a trunk line now called the internet. So the way I think this phone number is going to work is you'll get a busy signal if somebody's on it. But what we'll do is you'll watch and I'll say, oh, we're on the phone right now. And you watch. And as soon as that person gets disconnected, you dial that number because that number is now open and ready. What is in the news this week? Apple's a little bit in trouble with the EU. The EU has said, dudes. As you probably know, Apple uses a proprietary connecting port on its iPhone, the Lightning port, right? And they even have a special program, MFI, made for iPhone, that I think costs quite a bit of money to get into. So if you're making a peripheral that's going to use the Lightning port and you want to label it MFI, you don't have to. People sell Lightning cables that aren't. But we often say, oh, maybe you shouldn't buy those. But the MFI ones are more expensive. So Apple is going to have to change this Lightning port to a USB-C port, according to EU regulations. Not not this year, but next year. However, the thinking is probably the iPhone 2015 or the iPhone 15 for 2023 will probably have a USB-C charging port. Certainly it will have to next year. Then Apple's starting to put out this, well, we have an MFI program for Type-C connectors. Of course, they use Type-C on their iPads and their MacBooks. And the EU is saying, no, no. You have to be able to charge with any type C. That's the whole point of this thing. So the EU has warned Apple that you cannot have faster charging with MFI cables than you have with non-MFI cables. EU Industry Commissioner Thierry Breton said, "We will prevent iPhones from being sold in the EU if you don't do as we say." The EU's really, they're really feeling their oats, as we say. Feeling their oats. There will be a DEF CON in Vegas in August. That's going to be always, it's always exciting. They have Black Hat and DEF CON, the big hacker conventions in Vegas. Father Robert is undoubtedly going there. This year, they often have these little villages. You may remember a few years ago, they had an election machine village where hackers had a bunch of election machines and were hacking them. This year, they're going to have an AI village where hackers will be invited to go on in and attack large language models, things like ChatGPT from OpenAI and Bard from Google, Anthropics, and others. AI village organizers say it's, quote, the largest red teaming exercise ever for any group of AI models. They expect thousands of people, that might be a little over optimistic, including hundreds of students, all of whom will be tasked with finding flaws. What are flaws? Well, things like hallucinations, bias, that's actually probably a good thing, and jailbreaks. That's one of the fun things people do with ChatGPT. They try to find a prompt. You know, that's the thing you type, the question you type to ChatGPT, a prompt that'll get around ChatGPT's inherent limitations on what it can do. So if you want to get ChatGPT to tell you how to, for instance, build a bomb, if you just ask it, it'll say, well, no, I am not going to tell you. I will not. Don't ask me that. I am not going to tell you that. But then if you craft a prompt that gets around it, things like, you know, play a role for me, ChatGPT. And it apparently likes to do that. As a bad guy, and I'm a good guy, and I'm trying to get you not to build a bomb, but you insist on doing it, that kind of thing. And ChatGPT say, well, yeah, I like being a bad guy. Let me tell you how to build a bomb. So that's the kind of thing they're going to be working on. That'll be interesting. That's in August at DEF CON in Las Vegas. Finally, before we get to the calls, and we have a few, again, call.twit.tv. Oh, I didn't even mention Scott Wilkinson is coming up. In just a little bit, he'll be here at 12 noon, and Johnny Jett will be joining us at 1 p.m. That's both; those are both Pacific time. So in about 45 minutes, Scott Wilkinson talking home theater. One more news story, though, before we get to the calls. Fortnite is now an Olympic e-sport. So you may remember we talked about this a couple of months ago. The International Olympic Committee said, we're going to try out esports. I don't think esports are sports, but they have a competition. There'll be 9 virtual sports, including Just Dance and Gran Turismo. The IOC has now added a 10th discipline. Are you ready for this? They call it sport shooting. Yeah, it's not exactly sport because have you ever watched esports? The guys playing it, they're kind of slack-jawed. It's not exactly athletics. Anyway, sports shooting will be a specially designed island in Fortnite. And you'll be able to go in there and show, I don't know, will it be like, will you have to ski and then shoot like a biathlon? I don't know. So it'll be interesting. This is a U-turn because the IOC had originally said, we're not going to do killer games. But every combat sport has its origins in a real fight among people. Boxing, right? but sport is the civilized expression of this. So I guess Fortnite is a civilized version of this. This will be in the this will be 12 players from the top 12 players from the 2023 Fortnite Champion Series, and this I guess will be next year, Singapore, the 2024 Olympics. Next June, we'll have Fortnite. You know what? I will watch that. I will watch that. I mean, it's at least as fun as watching swimmers, right? ATG, Ask the Tech Guy, the website techguylabs.com. If you want to see more, get the show notes. If you want to see the video or watch the audio or get links to your favorite podcast players or YouTube, techguylabs.com is still working. Let's go to our first call, putting John in the room. Hello, John.
Zoom meeting dash on dash air. Meeting duration comma. You are in the meeting hosted by with Reaper.
Hello.
Hi, John. We're hearing the voiceover.
Okay. Well, okay.
It'll stop in a second. I know. John, welcome. Where are you calling from?
I'm here in Leesburg, Virginia.
Beautiful Leesburg. And we've talked to you before. I know. How you doing?
Yeah, we.
And I know you're going to ask me once again if I used Bitwarden command line.
No, I won't ask you that again because you
I played with it. I played with it. I'm not sure really what worked fine for me. I did not have to run Node.js, so I think there's some.
Really?
Yeah. So I think there's.
It does say you have to do that.
Yeah, I think that's
not Node.js.
I think that's
JQ.
JQ maybe. Yeah, I didn't.
If you want to edit and do anything with it, because otherwise it's kind of jumbled up. And then, so if you want to really edit anything or do anything, you have to,
okay,
you know, and then once you do that, then when I put it in an editor, an Emacs, of course, and then
good man.
Edit this, and then I copy the ID, and then you have to do an encode and then edit the ID and
oh,
then do
Lord.
An edit.
How annoying is that? And that's just to add a password or to change a password?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, do anything you want.
I did not experience that. Let me go back and look at it again. Maybe I just installed it using a package manager, and it seemed to run as a normal password manager would, but only at the command line. So they had some command line switches and stuff.
It's called BW. When you do that,
right,
and then there's all kinds of switches, and there's a help, and there's a lot of different things. So, but it's definitely not exactly your user friendly.
Yeah, that's too bad. Yeah, and I know you want to use it because you want to use your screen reader with it, and that's too.
And
bad.
Then I have Windows and I have Mac here, and so but it's nice to use the command line.
Of course, it is. Yeah. So how is Emacs with a screen reader?
Oh well. It depends. Now, on the Mac, I have to use a special screen reader called Emacs Speak.
Oh, interesting.
Which was written by a guy, and he invented it about 20 years ago, and it does certain. But the way it works, though, it's strange because it only works if you advise the functions. I don't know if you're familiar with that. So it will work pretty well on some.
Oh yeah, you have to let them know that. Yeah, I understand. Yeah. So this is very Emacs-y. So it's an Emacs package. That's kind of interesting.
Yes, it's an Emacs package. And then the author has to, or somebody has to advise the function.
Yeah, the functions need to hook into, basically have to be hooked into
the
screen reader so that they'll go through the screen reader. That's cool.
So this worked with Mac on Linux, I just use the Speak Up screen reader, which comes with it.
Emacs is a plain text editor that is in a command line, so it's a
wonderful editor.
Ideal, yeah. Once you learn it, it's a wonderful editor. I'm a big Emacs fan.
Oh yeah, you have to learn
There's
it.
There's like, a fairly, fairly
it's a learning
steep
curve.
Learning curve. Yes,
it's a curve definitely. And the only thing that I don't like the arrangement is. I hate HTML email. I've always hated it.
Me too.
And a lot of
no one should
a
use
lot of
it.
Times they'll send it it won't be an attachment. It'll just be the plain part of the email. And so I have to do some trickery I use SHR so I can read the darn stuff.
Yeah.
But then I can't do links that way. You know, so it's kind of a mess. I hate anyway HTML.
Well, and I've for a long time said people really shouldn't use HTML in email because it basically is a security problem.
And I never use it myself.
It's putting a web page in your email package. And as with any web page that you're visiting, it could have exploits and it can call scripts and so forth.
So
it's a bad idea. And email is designed around plain text. It works wonderfully.
Exactly. Yeah. It works great.
And for accessibility, if you're blind, having it in plain text instead of bracket, HTML, bracket, doc, 3.0, bracket, all that stuff is much
easier. All that stuff, yeah, right.
I can't imagine what a screen reader reading HTML must sound like. Nuts.
Well, it sounds kind of strange. And so there's a part of Emacs called SHR Render Region.
Ah.
And then if you have to...
you select the text only. Yeah.
And then it gets rid of all the tags.
Well, John, we're boring all the non-Emacs, non-Lisp users out there, which is like everybody except you and me. So what can I do for you?
I had to learn Lisp, too, to use it.
Of course you do, yes, because Emacs is written in its own Lisp dialect called eLisp. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. So I have a Mac here, and I have this iMazing program.
Which Micah recommends, and I started using on Micah's recommendation. It's a paid program, about $40, but it gives you access to your iOS device for backup, but also for copying and looking at data.
I'm using it as my main backup onto the computer now, and I have it set to do a daily backup.
Nice.
But what it does is it seems to gradually shift the time forward a little bit each day, and the worst of it is, in order to work this, you have to enter your password to do the backup. That's an iOS problem.
Because Apple doesn't want to put private data on a computer unless you encrypt it, and that's why the password.
And it's encrypted.
By the way, Apple does that also when you just use its own facilities for copying the iPhone.
That's correct.
You have to do an encrypted backup if you wanted to get passwords and things like that. And that's, I guess, to protect your privacy. Yeah.
But I can't get it to stay at the same time
every day.
That's
very strange. So automatic backups with snapshot report support. Since you're a Linux, Unix user, a guru, you understand it's probably doing something like a cron job. Sometimes cron jobs randomize.
It isn't a cron job exactly. It's part of the iMazing.
I understand. But I'm saying that sometimes cron will randomize a little bit the time so that you don't get everything happening all at once. And I'm wondering if that's iMazing is doing something like that. Does it continually move forward in time, or does it move backward and forward? It always goes forward.
I'd like to get it to the old time, but there's some kind of rule that it'll only back up 24 hours later. And then,
that sounds like a bug in iMazing. And I wonder if, a lot of times you don't know it, but under the hood, they're using facilities that are built into the Mac, like cron. Mac has cron.
They could be.
Or
I use
like,
cron for something.
Yeah, or cron like thing. And maybe that's, but I think you're going to have to call, I'm sorry to say, iMazing to find out what they're doing, because that sounds like a bug. In fact, you might be doing them a favor. It says configure when and how frequently each of your Apple devices is backed up. Be notified when you're behind. See, in theory, it should be exactly the same time every time. I could see if it maybe would rotate that time around so that you don't have collisions. Your system doesn't get bogged down, but it shouldn't be advancing continually into the future, because eventually you're going to miss a backup, right?
Well, I don't know. Yeah. And then it also does some strange thing. Like in Ventura, it used to be that you could set a schedule for the Mac to wake up, because the Mac has to wake up first.
Right.
And in Ventura, they abolished that schedule, so I had to use a strange program called PM Set to try to do a schedule when the Mac would wake up. But now the amazing is way off of that schedule now. It's about an hour off now, more than an hour off.
Let's see what Scooter X says. The iMazing app has a backup time frame setting. If you wish to restrict backups to a specific time frame, you should allow for at least a few hours. Computer must be awake during the specific time frame and your iPhone or iPad reachable via Wi-Fi. Backup of the device was made too recently, iMazing will skip a backup. With all of that, exactly what you expect. What you don't expect is that time frame slowly slides through the day. I think that's a bug on their part. And I think you would be doing them a favor by calling them and saying, or emailing them and saying, there's a flaw. Yeah.
Yes, I will do that. I hadn't done that because I thought, well, if there's a way to get around it, then I'll.
Yeah. Well, if I knew of a way, I would, of course, not hide it from you. but I do not know of a way. So interestingly, I think you found a bug. That doesn't sound right, to be honest.
Well, yeah. The other question I have is, if I wanted to send you a video message, what app would I use to record the video message?
Well, if you want to do video, you could just use your iPhone and use the camera. Record a video, and then at the end of the video, there's a share. This must be hard if you're blind, but you obviously
there's a share thing.
You figured it out. Obviously, I'm really impressed. But there'll be a share sheet, and the share sheet can send it to an email address. And so,
okay, got it. Okay,
just email us that video. Yeah.
Okay, sounds good.
Hey, it's always a pleasure talking to you, John. You're quite impressive. Quite the geek.
I don't know. I love Emacs. I use it on everything.
I do too. And as I get older and my vision deteriorates, I'm glad to know I'll be able to continue to use it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's one of those things that you wish you'd started 20 years earlier.
Right, exactly. And then, and some Emacs apps have a tremendous amount of variables you have to set, and there's a lot of
rules. I'm impressed that you're able to do it, but it's kind of fun. And Emacs is one of those things where it rewards the effort, but it is acknowledged to be a lot of effort. There's a lot to learn, but it rewards that. And as you get better and better at it, and I've only been using it for maybe 10 years. It's going to take me at least another 10 years to get proficient at it. But it's funny because you get it bit by bit. There's a wonderful book, by the way, if anybody wants to learn about Emacs, called Mastering Emacs by Mickey Peterson. It's online.
I'll have to get it.
Oh, it is the best book. And Mickey has his Mastering Emacs site. I think it's masteringemacs.com, has a blog. And so he'll cover different topics in the blog. It is a great way to learn because Emacs, you can't learn all at once. It's just too much. Best to kind of, there's a tutorial built in. Do the tutorial so you know enough of it to start to use it as an editor. And then just use it as your text editor from now on. And you'll slowly add things. There's, the old adage about Emacs, it's a great operating system with a mediocre text editor built in. it can do almost anything, and it really is a wonderful thing.
It can read EPUB books.
Oh, yeah. And if I were, for a blind user, I think it would be a godsend because everything is plain text.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you can even do plain text browsing built into it. Hey, always a pleasure, John.
It doesn't work too well, but,
Well, the web is not designed for text only, is it? I mean,
that's right. It's not.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks, John.
Well, thanks.
Have a great one. Take care.
Thank you.
I think we got Richard back. Yes. You tell me we do. And you press the buttons and everything. I see it going. So if I just, should I send him in the breakout room? Let's see what happens. Press him. Send him. Richard, we got you back. Sorry if I hung up on you earlier. You're watching Ask the Tech Guys with just one tech guy today. Micah is taking the day off. Hi, Richard.
Maybe now?
Yes, now.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Well,
not only now, but the sound is wonderful.
Thank you. I have a PR40. It's a lifestyle.
You have a PR40?
You betcha.
Man, my ear must be.
Is there another mic?
There is no other mic in the world.
I see people talking about Shure mics and these, $2,000 neodymium, electrostatic. No.
No.
PR40 for life.
Isn't that funny? I did not know you were using a PR40. I just noticed how good it sounded. Must be my ear is now tuned to this. I remember getting this is made by our friend Bob Heil. Heil Sound, longtime rock and roll sound guy, ham radio operator, and he bemoaned years ago the lack of quality in microphones for ham operators, started making better microphones for hams, and eventually ended up making better microphones for everything. These are widely used in broadcasts now and podcasts. And I remember that it was a podcast expo. I think it was the second one. We won Best Podcast Award. And this was the award. It was a Heil mic. Bob gave it to me and I plugged it in and we did a show from the show floor. And I said, I'm in love with this mic. I will never use any other mic. And now I hear you using it. I love it. What can we do for you, Richard?
At first I had a very fun chat with John early on when the system crashed. It dumped he and I into a Zoom meet.
Oh, nice.
And so, no, I meant John, who he was talking.
John Ashley. The blind gentleman. Yeah.
Yeah. And we had a great conversation, but it was like, why am I talking to you? Why am I talking to you? Who are you? It was
so great. Everybody should get to know John Ashley, who produces this show and is one of our great editors. And John actually is going to get a little bit of a promotion. Come on over here. You could sit in Micah's chair. He's going to get a little bit of a promotion because our longtime COO, Jerry Wagley, is leaving the building. And John, you're going to get all of his responsibilities. Title, but not money.
Yeah, a longer title on the desk. That's how they hook you.
Maybe we can give you a little bump too. I won't speak for Lisa, but that would be a nice thing. But yeah, everybody's going to step up. John has done such a great job that we decided to give him a little bit more to do. So what can I do for you, Richard?
So my question is, I'm on a Mac Mini 2014. Happy with it. Great machine. I'll never go back from a Mini. I'll never use an iMac again.
Yeah, they're really great.
Been for years. Yeah. I'm on 10.13.6.
Which maybe is that the most recent you can use?
No, I can use most recent. But my question is, I have software that I have paid for.
Yeah, 32-bit software.
Let's say Wiretap Studio.
Yeah.
I have Soundboard. Yeah. I have, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. Is there any place I can go or software I can run that I can say, okay, I want to upgrade to 10.15. Here's what it'll kill of my
proprietary. Oh, yeah, there was. So there's a couple of things you could do. One is, don't go all the way to the most recent one.
Right. No.
Catalina was the one that killed the 32 bits, but whatever the one that was right before Catalina, when you ran those programs in that operating system, it said, well, I got to warn you, this is a 32 bit. It's not going to work with the next update. So Apple gave us a whole year and warned you when you saw 32 bit software. There must be, I would think somebody would have written a program that would go around and just collect all the 32 bit.
I would think so too.
Software.
However, I
don't know of one. Let me see if somebody. Yeah. So are you, do you make music? What do you do with all of this stuff?
No. I do radio shows of my own and I do produce for other people.
Nice.
So I produce online audio events.
Oh.
You know, gatherings of 500 to 600 people where they're lecturing or teaching a regular class.
Are you a friend of Alex Lindsay's by any chance?
I should have been.
Yeah.
I saw Alex recently and he was using the Madonna microphone.
He's amazing.
Something better than the Madonna microphone. What was that little
stick? Well, it's called a Countryman.
Oh,
and we've used Countryman in the wild when we go to CES or NAB or other events where you can't have a Heil sitting in front of you. And you'll see him in TED Talks and TED uses them in other lectures. I think they were originally developed for the Broadway stage.
Right.
So they're flesh colored and you can get them in any flesh tone and they're just a little tiny capsule. It is of course a condenser to be that small. But the sound quality is quite good. And that's what you'll see in Broadway. It's small enough. They can tape it behind a lapel. They can I've seen people, cause I like to sit in the front row with tape on their forehead and a microphone subtly blended in with their hairline. But that's what the Countryman can do. And a Countryman is quite a good microphone. Yeah. Alex was using that the other day. Yeah.
The other day on Mac Break. And I thought, this guy looks like he's shot in, I don't know how he looks as sharp and he's so well lit. And so
that's why I said, do you know him? So the best thing you could do, and I think you should do this, is go to officehours.global, which is Alex's daily show. And it's, you know, there's 40 or 50 people in there every day, and many people doing what you do. And they talk about all of these topics all the time, kind of obsessively. If you're obsessive about microphones and things like, you know, Countrymen, want to know more about that, that's a great place to go. If you join the Zoom, and there's information there at officehours.global, how to join the Zoom, you can ask questions. Otherwise, you can watch it on YouTube. You can passively consume it. But it is, I think, a great place for anybody who's in the fields of audio engineering, streaming, video. It's a really great place to learn all about that stuff. He's done an amazing
I followed in your footsteps, and I started in 2009 producing shows for people online. But it's always audio only, because my thing is, as handsome as you are, I don't need to see us talk.
Yeah. Well, thank you for saying I'm handsome. Obviously, you're not watching. I have a handsome voice.
Yes, exactly. Me too. People are like, wow, you look great. Well,
we were talking about that the last show with Micah from Maine, who has a beautiful voice as well, another radio guy, and just doesn't match. It's not that he's not attractive. He just doesn't match my expectations. And it's always a problem with people in radio. When you meet people in the real world, their faces often fall. Because they have built, it's not necessarily that you're, you know, disappointingly ugly or whatever. It's just that they have a picture in their mind of what you look like.
Yeah.
And then when you see them, it's like, oh, that's not my picture at all. So I'm looking, I was kind of, to be honest, I was stalling.
Yes.
Because I knew somebody would know this. Scooter X did in our IRC. And it turns out you already have this built in to your Macintosh.
Okay.
So if you want to use Mac OS 10, anything after Mojave, 10.14 is Mojave. The last version is Mojave that supports 32-bit. So you can go, believe it or not, into system information.
Wow.
And it will list, apps, I guess, in 32-bit. But I also, he also sent us an article from Macworld that has a program from St. Clair Software called Go64 that scans it and tells you, Go64. It will give you actually really nice display of all the apps plus web links to the app's website so you can see if there's an upgrade for it.
Okay.
But System Report will also do this. If you, as you know, under the Apple menu, you can select About This Mac and then press that System Report button. This is something they took away from us, by the way, in the most recent version of Mac OS Ventura. And then if you look at applications in your System Report, there is a list, and you can sort it by 32-bit or 64-bit. So that's another way to do it. Not quite as fancy. He also recommends, in this Macworld, I bet you it's somebody we know. Oh, yeah. Roman Loyola. Worked with Roman and his wife for years at Tech TV. So Roman also does what I used to do when I got the M1 Mac, which is to run Activity Monitor and sort. And you can actually sort the activities that are, but they have to be running. So this is only useful to look at it if you've got something running. But, you know, you could just get it. Anyway, there's three ways to do it.
Okay.
Your pick. Your pick. Richard, a real pleasure talking to you. I'm sorry you got dumped out into
It was fun. It was an adventure. I produced live, so I was like, okay, I'm riffing with this guy while I'm trying to figure out what's going on. And he's like, who are you? You sound like Leo. I'm not Leo. Believe me, I'm not Leo.
It's the beautiful John Ashley.
Exactly.
And he really is handsome, unlike Leo. So
good for him.
Yeah.
No, well, you've met me. I'm not exactly what people expect either, but they recognize the voice.
This is old chef guy.
Yeah, this is old chef guy. Yes,
I didn't put two and two together. Hi, Richard.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. I'm jealous of your trip to Rome.
Oh, Lord. Don't get me started on Rome.
My body weight in pizza.
The food is great, but everything's great. If you like history, it's great, too. It's an amazing city. I bought Lisa a book for Mother's Day. I thought it was today. So I guess I have to get another gift now, right? But it was called Silent Rome, and it was a lovely set of pictures taken during COVID, when, of course, Italy was hard hit and everything was shut down, including all of the places that you go today to Rome, and it's jammed with tourists, were empty, empty, empty. And it's a beautiful book. It really was lovely. Rizzoli publishes it. Anyway.
Wonderful.
Thank you, Richard.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
I want to talk about electric bikes because I am a big fan. One of the things in Rome it's famous for is Vespas, right? All these people driving these little mopeds around. But one of the things I thought was so great when we were in Rome is more than, I would say, a third of the people now are riding e-bikes. And what a great way to as good as a Vespa in Rome, we're going to ride in. This is the e-bike you should get. I am a big e-bike fan. So e-bikes have batteries in them, and they have motors in them, usually in the rear hub, and they're what they call pedal assist. So it's not a motorcycle. It's not a Vespa, although some have throttles. These great electrics do from electricebikes.com. In fact, here I am riding one of their cargo bikes. This is what they need all over Rome. Big fat tires. You can go over cobblestones. You can go over rough streets. Powerful engines. And they're silent, no emissions, easy to charge up, very economical. And if they are fun, you know, this is the real thing. They're fun to ride. I am a huge fan. From quick store trips to outdoor adventures, electric e-bikes create a mode of transport anyone can ride. I don't know about you. As you get older, your knees, you know, start to get a little twingy. So I love bike riding. I have since I was a kid. But as I got older, the hills got higher, steeper. Not anymore. My electric e-bike, I just whiz up those hills. You're still riding, by the way. A lot of studies say you still get as much exercise because you get out more. It's so much fun. You know, Mother's Day is about a week off. Maybe I should. Oh, no, Lisa already has electric e-bike. That was the one we were just showing. I love this. Mother's Day right around the corner. Box of chocolates not appreciated. Try this. This is electric e-bike folds. This electric folds. Look, I'm going to unfold it. That means it fits into your trunk. It fits into anywhere. You unfold it and you can ride anywhere. So if you want to go to a park, if you want to go to a trail, you bring your electric bike, you unfold it, your e-bike, you set the seat to where you want it, and it is fun to ride. They have that key there, by the way. Make sure that it will not inappropriately unfold. It's got a great readout that shows you your speed. It's got lights built in that are powered by the battery, so you're very safe. And man, are they fun to ride. With quality, feature-filled models financed as low as $73 a month, your adventures won't cost a fortune. Mom will love it. But, you know, don't just get it for mom. Get it for the whole family. You get a powerful removable battery, a bright LCD display, 7-speed gearing. That's more than enough for an e-bike, by the way. And 5 levels of pedal assist to power your ride. And that's what I love in the pedal assist. As you know, if you want, you could turn it down to 1 and do more work. If you'd like more help, you could turn it up to 5. And you get going. It's a top speed of 20 miles an hour. You'll reduce, actually, 28 miles an hour on these. Wow, that's really great. And it has a throttle. Now, I'll tell you why you want the throttle. When you're pedaling, it's fine. But when you're stopped at a stoplight, you know how you have to kind of step on the pedals to get going and everybody behind you is going, come on, come on, come on. With electric e-bike, you turn the throttle and you just start going without any pedaling. You just start going. It's fantastic. Lower your gas costs, reduce your carbon footprint. It's fantastic. Electric, L-E-C-T-R-I-C. E-bikes, E-B-I-K-E-S, foldable. Oh, here's another thing. They ship free and they're fully assembled. So you don't have a big assembly job. You just pull them up and you're ready to go. You'll be riding Mother's Day right in the morning. Electric e-bikes offer a wide range of customizable and adjustable e-bike options to accommodate all different lifestyles, from the effortlessly fun XP Lite to that big expedition bike that we were riding. There's their cargo e-bike. One of the things they do with the cargo e-bike is they give you more torque. You know, electric engines have a lot of torque. Because if you've got a big load behind you, you need that torque to get started. It makes it very, very easy. Love the expedition. Join more than 250,000 dedicated riders on the road right now riding electric e-bikes. Celebrate your mom or get one for yourself. Or better yet, the whole family. Give her all the freedom that comes with electric e-bike. Visit electricebikes.com to learn more. Explore the epic models they have to offer. Really affordable. I think a lot of people, you know, look at the e-bikes from some of these fancy, you know, designer companies, go, I don't want one of those. No. These are the best. They're great e-bikes at a great price. Electric, LECTRIC, e-bikes, EBIKES.com. I love this foldable thing too, because sometimes I don't want to ride in the streets, but the fact that I can fold it up, pop it in my trunk, it'll actually fit my frunk even, pop it in the frunk and go to the mountains or go to the park and ride it there. Heaven, I'm in heaven. Electricebikes.com. We thank them so much for their support of Ask the Tech Guys, and you support us when you go. You know, they don't have a special address. I guess just go. Just go, and they'll know. And if they ask you, just say, oh, yeah, Leo sent me, or I saw it on the Tech Guys or whatever. You will love, just trust me, I've been a fan for years now. You will love these. All right, on we go with the show. In just a few minutes, Scott Wilkinson, our home theater geek, is going to join us. But I've got some time to take another call, and I see a hand raised. Julian's got his hand up. Is this Tech JV on the line?
Hello, can you hear me?
I hear you.
All right. Hey, it's working.
It is. I recognize the voice. Tech JV on the line. Hello, Julian. Julian is a great advocate for blind users. He's blind himself, and he does mobile assistive technology, training, consulting, tech support presentations. But he has for years called the radio show and offered his support to blind listeners. You go to techjv.com or email help at techjv.com. Did you enjoy John's conversation about screen readers in Emacs?
I did, but it was a little over my head. That's a little more geeky than what I get.
Well, to each his own, right? To each his own.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm glad it's doable, you know?
Yeah.
Someday maybe I will get inspired and learn to play with that stuff.
So love that.
People like him actually help to give us that information.
Yeah. Actually, that's a great idea. Yeah. We all have to help each other, don't we?
Absolutely.
So what's up in your world, Julian?
Well, I wanted to share a couple of app resources to, again, help others. And if there's time, maybe ask you about a little gadget I'm contemplating. So for iOS, there's this great little app that's called OKO, O-K-O. It's called the AI Copilot for the Blind. And what this app does is it tells you the state of pedestrian crossing signals.
Oh, interesting.
And
so this is one thing that's really started to change thanks to the advent of AI and these large language models. We've talked before about Be My Eyes, where a human will help you, but you have to wait for a human to get online, you know, use the app. But we're seeing more and more of these where an AI supports you. And this is kind of what OKO is all about. It can actually see the signs. How does it work?
Yeah. So, and let me just give this disclaimer that it doesn't replace your mobility training and skills and things like that.
Absolutely.
I always look at this as an informational tool to confirm something.
Right.
So I always go by the traffic primarily before I cross a street. But there are some crossings, for example, where it's not a lot of traffic going all four directions. So the way we normally cross a street is is you listen for the parallel traffic to be going, and that's how you know when it's safe to go.
See, that seems to me, this is one of the reasons people are advocates for the blind. We're worried about electric vehicles and I guess electric bikes too. They're not as loud.
Yeah, I was one of the people who went with the NFB to Congress for years to get them to finally put regulations on that, because it's a problem.
They do now. All of them have speakers and they make sounds at low speeds. And is that working well? You can hear him?
Yeah, it does work better. I'd like to see it more and more, you know. Yeah. And I guess as time goes on, newer vehicles will all have it. But what was surprising is how many people I would speak to in Congress that also, as sighted people, had incidents where they were walking down the street and something came out of an alley and surprised them. So,
all the time. You want to hear these vehicles. And it doesn't have to sound like a brum, brum. My Mustang Mach-E has a kind of a it's hard to describe, but a low whining sound that's a little rumbly, but it's clearly an EV. And it also has, and some people don't like it, but like a truck, it has a backup beep. For the same reason, I think it's absolute safety reasons, and I think it's, I'm glad to have it, to be honest.
It helps. So
sure.
But yeah, so, you know, we listen to the sound of the traffic. Well, there are some intersections, for example, where you're crossing a big street, but the parallel street's a small street that doesn't always have a lot of consistent traffic, or a T intersection.
Right.
So this is where this app really comes in handy, because you can basically hold the phone out at chest level or wear it in a little chest mount or something like that. And you aim it in front of you, and the back camera, as soon as it sees the signal that you all are looking at to tell you whether it's walk or don't walk or counting down, as soon as it locks onto that, it starts giving you audio and haptic feedback to tell you what the state of that crossing is.
That's fantastic. What a great idea.
It just works great. It's a free app. And so far for me, it's been 100% accurate. So that's one thing I wanted to share.
And it works in the dark, by the way.
Yeah.
OKO, AI Copilot for the Blind. And it's from Eyes, AYESBV.
Yes.
And it's free on the App Store. What a great idea.
Yeah. It is a great app. For Android users, I wanted to share a currency identifier app that recently became available there. It's been available on iOS for a while, and it is called Cash Reader. And this app is great because, you know, it does the obvious. You hold up any denomination in front of you, any bill, and it'll tell you what it is within seconds. But it also does many foreign currencies, and it even has a currency conversion feature that they just recently added.
I love that. I could have used that in Rome.
Can hold, yeah, exactly. So, you know, the disclaimer with that one is obviously it can't detect whether a bill is counterfeit or real. You can test it by, you can go to Google and bring up a picture of a denomination and wave it in front of the app, and it'll tell you that's the bill.
It's not for testing for counterfeits. Yeah. Yes. Okay.
But it does help when the bill's in your hand, and you can sort your bills very quickly with apps like these. So I just wanted to let everybody know this is now available on Android as well.
We've had for a long time coins you can tell because they'll be ridged or by size and weight. But bills are all pretty much the same. In some countries, they're different sizes. And I think maybe we should consider that in the U.S.
Well, you know, we had supposedly legislation that was supposed to make that happen. And when they introduced new bills, they were supposed to. But I'm sad to say that when they introduced the new, I think it's $20 bill now with Harriet Tubman, they did not implement, they didn't hold up their end of the bargain. So, you know, it's that big
change machine lobby. They don't want odd-shaped bills in their change machine. I don't know. I'm making that up. I don't. Right. I can't think of a reason not to do it. And they do it in many countries.
Yeah, they do.
In Mexico, the smaller the bill, the lower the denomination. So,
but at least technology comes to the rescue, and we don't have to depend on the government to do it for us. We can do it for ourselves.
Cash Reader.
I'm always a big fan of that.
This is from Martin Dudera. It says in-app purchases. What is it? It can't be. Is it expensive?
Yeah. Well, the way it works is you can subscribe to it or you can do a lifetime purchase.
Okay.
So, you know, it's not free. There are free things. There are things out there that are free that will do it. But this is just very lightning fast. It's being developed and it recognizes, again, multiple currencies from other countries where some of these apps will only do U.S. or a limited amount. So, you know, you get what you pay for it. I think it's a worthwhile tool for the toolbox.
I wonder if Google Lens, Lens, which is built into Android now, and Apple has something similar. The idea is you have a picture and there's a button in the camera. It needs to say it, right? It needs to say it out loud. It can't just show it.
Right.
And that's, I guess, the problem. Yeah, they're not designed.
Yeah, and I think some of these tools will, but this is just a very easy thing. You launch the app. It's running. It'll do it fast. You don't have to open Lens or open up some of these other apps that exist, again, that are free, but that make you jump through hoops to get to that point where you can test your bill to see what it is.
Right.
So that's the thing. So, and then the last thing I wanted to ask your opinion of are these little mini PCs. So I'm looking at this one by a company called Melee, M-E-L-E. It's called Melee Fanless PC. I think it's like 3x5 by almost 1 inch.
Wow.
And it's just incredible. The specs on this thing, full-fledged, like the power of a desktop computer, although they do say it's not the best for gaming or video editing. But for regular everyday tasks, like for what I use it for, I think it it looks very encouraging, and I'm thinking about picking one up.
Yeah, Intel created this form factor. You might have they're basically sticks. Roku and other streamers offer stick versions of their video streamers. The idea is you've got an entire PC in what looks like an oversized USB key. The negative on this is heat. And because there isn't a fan and it really doesn't have a lot of capacity or air in there to disperse heat. So that's where you're really going to, you know, run into troubles. But Intel's been making these for a long time. I don't know if this is a Intel design or not from Melee. $200 for 8 gigabyte of RAM, 128 gigabytes of storage. And I don't know, does it say, oh, it's a Celeron J4125 processor. And that's the issue. You're never going to see, you don't want to see one of the high-end 12th generation's i5 right. processors in there. There's too much heat. I wonder if Apple and ARM, you know, Qualcomm with these low-energy efficient RISC processors might do a better job with something like this than Intel. I'm going to have to keep my eye peeled. But this looks pretty good. M-E-L-E. The PC Go, and they make it in a variety of form factors, not form factors, processors and RAM configurations. But it's very affordable. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm thinking of just replacing an old desktop with this because these days, sure. I mean, most of what I do on the mobile phones now, but there are some tasks that still just work better. For web browsing, for example, the JAWS screen reader with its hotkeys and all kinds of configurations is just more efficient for doing web research.
That's a really good point. And you just plug this into the back of a TV if you wanted to see something. I guess you don't really care about that. Does it have to have a screen? Yeah,
no, that's a beautiful part for a blind person. This is ultra portable. So with a Bluetooth keyboard, a Bluetooth headset, and just a little case, and you can even plug it into a 12-volt battery, from what I understand. You can have a very portable, lightweight computing solution that you can travel with without a screen.
Cool is that? That's really interesting. Comes with dual-band Wi-Fi as well, so you're connected. Very cool. Always, JV, great to have you on, and always great to hear from you and get your tips. TechJV.com is the website. If you want to know more, you can email help@techjv.com for all of our blind listeners. And I know we've always had a lot, you know, radio naturally has a lot of blind, listeners. We've been really grateful for your help all this time. Thank you, Julian. Techjv.com. There's Julian. Have a great day.
Take care.
Take care. Bye. Guess who's on the line with us right now? Mr. Scott Wilkinson, home theater geek. Hello, Scott.
Ooh, hey, Leo. How you doing, man?
I am doing very well. It's always a pleasure to see you. We should tell everybody we've brought the Home Theater Geek show back.
Oh, man, I'm so happy about that.
Scott's on every single week. It is a Club Twit special right now. As this is what we've been doing lately. It really works well when we have a new show. Of course, new shows don't yet have an audience or an advertiser base. So we can do it in the club because club members pay $7 a month for access to that kind of stuff. And right. that helps us subsidize it until it's, you know, big enough to push out of the nest and has its own wings. That's what we did with This Week in Space. It launched in the club, sort of launched in the club, and then is now out so in the public, so to speak, with ads and everything. And we hope to do the same with Home Theater Geeks and all the other shows in the club. If you're not a Club Twit member, you want to see Scott, there's a couple of things you can do. We do offer it through iTunes. So for $2.99 a month, you could just get that show. Apple offers that kind of a thing.
In an audio format, right?
Audio only. They don't do video yet. But if you want full access to the show, plus hands on Mac, hands on Windows, on Untitled Linux show, all the other
all
things
these great
do,
shows,
ad free versions of this show and all the other shows, it's $7 a month. I think for a few bucks more a month, it's probably worth doing that. And then you'd get
really worth doing. Gigs. Absolutely.
I'll give it a plug. twit.tv/clubtwit. So Scott sent me an email saying, what do you want me to talk about? Scott, I want you to talk about whatever is on your mind. Always.
Well, there's plenty of stuff to talk about, as always, which is one reason I love doing Home Theater Geeks, is that there's never a dearth of content. Now, I wanted to, for example, I thought of you when I saw this story last week You subscribe to YouTube TV, do you not?
I do, and I really like it. I have not yet cut the cord. I subscribed to YouTube TV. This is YouTube's $72 a month, basically cable replacement. You get your local channels. You get a number of cable specific channels like the ESPN channels. And now they've added some add-ons. 4K, for 10 bucks more a month, you get 4K. I did
4K
that.
4K HDR.
Yeah, I did that.
What do you think? Go ahead.
Well, I just bought another big expensive one because you, Google bought the rights from the NFL to NFL Sunday Ticket.
Yes.
$250 for the entire season. Or if you want the red zone feature where you see what's going on, you know, all the whenever a team's in the red zone, it's a little ADD. Because you got, you know, sometimes six games going on at the same time, and then they go, well, let's go to this one, let's go to this one, da, da, da. But and you don't see the whole game, you just see it when the team gets in the red zone. But that was an extra $20, I think 10 or $20 away. I ended up getting that too. So,
well, if you're into football, you know, and that's a recent addition that they made, this NFL season, Sunday Ticket.
Is the first season. Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. And now, can you do multi-view with that? They also just added multi-view, which I think is multiple programs on the screen simultaneously.
Sure. I don't know why you wouldn't be able to. So, but I don't know because there's no football yet. but when football comes, I'll be the first to let you know. I think the quality of YouTube TV is great, and I particularly like the DVR feature of it because all you have to do is find a show and say, add it to my library. You have an unlimited library. By the way, for the fee, you also get family use. So you have up to six people using it, each with their own DVR.
Right. So they can have their own content. They don't see everybody else's.
Yeah, and I love that. You know, I'm watching the Kentucky Derby. Lisa says, I got to go. Don't tell me who wins. Just save the race for me. On YouTube TV, you just press a button and it says add it to my library and you got it.
Yeah.
The coronation was at 4 a.m. California time yesterday. So I just went online on the YouTube TV app and I said, hey, get the whole thing. And it did. So that really makes it easy.
Very easy.
Yeah.
Indeed.
The one downside is skipping commercials.
Oh, you can't skip commercials?
You can, but it's not easy. It will really depend on how you're doing it. On an Apple TV, the control isn't really great. So skipping commercials is hard. There's nothing like on the TiVo where you just skip. The TiVo has a button where you press it and it skips through the commercial. There's nothing like that on YouTube TV.
Yep.
Although, if you have a voice assistant, and we do with Apple's TV, you can say, hey, Shlomo, skip ahead 3 minutes. And if you know how long the breaks are going to be, that actually works quite well.
So, okay.
Yeah, all right. I like the auto skip on TiVo. We also have a TiVo, and I prefer that. That's the one downside. The other thing maybe you should know is that YouTube TV doesn't necessarily have all the commercials. In fact, every once in a while, I'll be watching CNN and instead of a commercial, they'll have a picture of a bear in the woods and they'll say, enjoy this quiet moment while they're covering up. I think the local, you know, local cable commercials. So you have national commercials, cable commercials.
Right.
And I don't think they make those deals. So they have a blank space. So they just put nature.
Oh, that makes sense. Okay. All right.
Anyway, I didn't mean to steal your thunder, but as a kind of devoted YouTube TV viewer.
Well, this is why I thought of you because on Reddit, YouTube just posted some, I think, kind of important news. The most important of which is that they're experimenting with upgrading their bitrate and the image quality that they produce. Now, you say you like the image quality. It's, I think, about to get even better.
Yeah, that's the thing that people forget is when you're watching on an antenna, what you get is what you get.
Right.
But when you're streaming.
And it's really good on an over-the-air antenna.
The best quality because it's the least compression.
Correct.
But when you're streaming, it's highly compressed. And if your bandwidth is inadequate, YouTube TV, for instance, will step down the quality of the picture to match your bandwidth.
That's right.
So if you have a lot of bandwidth, you're getting whatever the best they have to offer. And now they're saying they're going to make it even better.
Well, and this is the point. The the information that I've been reading online about this is that YouTube TV typically maxes out at 720p resolution on your TV, and your TV, which is 4K, then upscales that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But now they're improving the codec, the coder decoder, compression decompression algorithms to increase the bandwidth where people have it going into their homes so that they'll actually be able to send 1080p.
Wow.
Which is a big upgrade.
So I pay for that 4K upgrade, but the very few broadcasts are 4K.
Correct.
I bought it during the Winter Olympics.
Right.
And they were offering a special deal.
Right.
Some of those broadcasts were in 4K, so they really looked good. The snow was very high quality.
But, yeah, yeah. I love high quality snow. Yeah.
But there's very few things that are in 4K. We're starting to see more. But I have to say, 720p, as bad as that might sound to a geek, isn't actually necessarily bad. It's often what you're getting on broadcasts.
Absolutely.
On your cable system anyway.
Well, in certain channels, Fox, ABC, ESPN,
yeah,
they do 720p. Everybody else does 1080i, which is the I stands for interlaced, and then the TV has to kind of put these two fields together to make each frame. But YouTube's now talking about doing 1080p, which means that each frame will come to you complete.
But what will they do with ESPN, which isn't offering 1080p?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know the answer to that.
I guess you'll get 720.
Yeah, you probably still get
it's what I get right now. I pay for 4K, but that's only on the very few things that are actually streaming in 4K.
That's right. That's right.
It's rare.
Yeah. And it is rare. Exactly. So they're going to make these improvements over the next few weeks, and you should see them since you're paying for the top tier.
Yeah.
I mean, you're paying
a ridiculous amount of money. It's as much as a cable bill.
Yeah,
it's basically a cable bill. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But you should be seeing this then in the coming weeks, and they're going to make it permanent in the summer. They're using the codec called VP9.
That's a Google codec.
Correct.
And supposedly very good, although I think I'm guessing H.265 might be better.
They're roughly equivalent.
Are they?
And the reason they're using VP9 is that it's so ubiquitous.
Right.
It's out
also
there everywhere.
Unencumbered. It's not owned by the JPEG folks.
Which H.265 is. Folks.
Right, right.
Now, the other one to be aware of that I wish more people implemented is AV1.
Oh, I don't know that
which
one.
That is even more efficient than VP9, like by about 25%. And it's also free, but it's not implemented everywhere. Hmm. So it's,
well, and that's, this is the, this, who was it said, is it Neil Gaiman, the future, or Neil Stevenson, the future's here, it's just not evenly distributed.
Right. Which is true.
It's true about TV. There's, most broadcast signals are 720p or 1080i.
Correct.
Is YouTube TV going to make a deal with ABC to get a higher quality content stream? That would be cool.
That would be cool.
I don't know.
Hard to say.
Yeah, they're not being clear about that.
There's all these deals, though, that have to be made. And I must say, this is one of the things I really don't like about streaming, is you have carriage deals that only last a certain amount of time. And if they're not renewed, then the content goes away.
Yeah.
This is why I like discs. One reason I actually like discs. I know
when we're even spoiled by streaming these days, when you stream some services like Netflix, you're getting 4K in some cases.
In some cases.
Not as good as your Blu-ray.
No.
But I'm not going to go out and buy a disc of my favorite show, Succession, but that's about it. Most of the time, I'm not going to rewatch something.
That's true.
In fact, more and more, and it's not good, but when I want to watch a movie, even if I want to buy it, I'll buy it on iTunes because it's convenient.
There it is. Convenience versus quality. And yes, discs are higher quality than virtually any streaming, but they're not as convenient.
Do you notice that?
I do.
You do. Okay.
I do. Yeah.
But I have that nice, QD OLED TV in my living room.
Oh, man, that thing is so sweet.
Thank you. I have to ask you, did you
Did you unleash the filmmaker setting? I couldn't find it.
No, it's in the picture mode. It's one of the listed picture modes.
Okay.
You just didn't scroll through far enough to get to it.
I think probably found cinema and said, okay, fine, good enough. But yeah, there is a
movie,
filmmaker.
In that case, it's movie mode. But yes, there is a filmmaker mode. You just have to scroll down a little farther through the list of picture modes and you'll find filmmaker mode. And that's what I set it to picture mode, to filmmaker mode.
Yeah. Thank you.
Which, in fact, disables all of the frame interpolation.
Right. That's what it really means, isn't it?
But that plus it disables noise reduction and
all
black enhancement, all that stuff.
All that stuff.
All
is
that
off
stuff.
Now. Which fine. Because you're looking at the way the filmmaker intended it. That's the premise.
Correct. Right? Yeah. Correct. That's what the point of that mode is. It's why it was developed.
I have to say, that's not always what I want. For instance, right now, Paramount Plus is streaming a remake of the old Fatal Attraction movie, you know, with Glenn Close.
Oh, yeah.
Michael Douglas. And we're watching it. And for some reason, the filmmakers decided to severely desaturate it. Obviously, it's
really?
An aesthetic choice. But yeah. I'm watching it, and I'm saying, I'm hitting the TV. Is there something wrong? Is there something wrong with the TV? And then I kept turning it off and on again and going to other channels.
Oh, no. It was that bad.
Well, sometimes you get a signal, you know, with HDMI, the signal gets garbled a little bit. And it's, yeah, it was that bad. And eventually I realized, no, this is how they intended it, because they had clips of the filmmakers that were nice 4K high quality interposed with clips from the show, which are desaturated.
Oh man.
So sometimes maybe the filmmaker's vision is not, not the best.
Well, I always defer to the filmmaker's vision. It's what they want you to see. So I'm going to watch it that way. Damn it.
Damn it, I'm going to watch it desaturated, and I'm going to take it that way because that's what, yeah, apparently the director didn't want it to look like it was in Technicolor, and I understand that.
Yeah,
you
sure.
You see this sometimes. Sure. Very famously, was it Vittorio Sicaro, the cinematographer for The Godfather, soaked the film stock in tea afterwards to give it a certain look. And if you watch The Godfather, I had the same reaction, by the way, the Godfather, when I first got the DVD of it, I thought,
yeah,
this is kind of muddy and muddy.
Yeah.
And it was intentional.
That was intentional.
What's his name?
Here's an example in the audio realm.
Yeah.
Oliver Stone. No. What's his name now? I can't think of his name. The guy who did Interstellar and Inception.
Oh, yeah. I know who you're talking about. I love it.
Yeah.
Christopher Nolan.
Christopher Nolan.
Nolan. Yes, Christopher Nolan. That's it. Thank you very much.
The Dark Knight of movies.
Yes.
Yes.
He very often will bury the dialogue in sound effects so that you're going, what? What? I can't hear it.
Yeah. Nolan does that on purpose.
And he does that on purpose.
Yeah.
And that bugs the hell out of me. Because I want to hear what they're saying.
Gordon Willis was a cinematographer on the original Godfather.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And what was surprising about that was he did it after the film was shot.
Oh, man. So
To the master.
Oh, my God.
Oh, it was a very gutsy thing to do.
No kidding.
That was also Paramount. Maybe there's something about Paramount. They just don't want anything. Scott Wilkinson, our home theater geek. Go to, do you have a website? I guess you have to join the club.
Actually, you have to join the club, and I hope you do. We do publish episodes occasionally to the public to sort of give you a taste.
Oh, good. So you can follow it on YouTube.
You can follow it on YouTube. But yeah, by all means, join the club. You'll have so much great content there, including Home Theater Geeks. So twit.tv/HTG, I'd say.
Yes.
I also write once a month on AVS Forum, a really interesting piece called Home Theater of the Month.
I love that. Do you have a new one this month?
I do. Yeah. Go up to avsforum.com and you'll see it on the homepage. This is a beautiful theater. Oh, man. He hired one of the premier home theater designers to come in and do his theater. And it's really gorgeous.
And don't be fooled by this. I know we're in May, but it's always the month before. So it's the April
theater. of the month. I do it. I do each month at the end of the month.
Yeah, the award winner. Oh, that does look. Isn't that amazing? He's got 8 seats in there or something like that. That's just
9 great. Actually. 9.
One for the director.
Yeah, that's an expensive theater. That cost $250,000 to put that theater together. You know, but it's not the most expensive one. 2 months ago, February, I think it was, I did $1 million theater.
Oh my gosh. You know, you should look at it
because he replicated the Star Wars Death Star to the nines.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
So as much as I admire this, and I've been in some, you know, home theaters from, you know, famous movie directors and producers and stuff. And as much as I like that, I feel like I've got 90% of the quality for a tenth or less, a hundredth of the cost.
It's true. It's true.
That last 10% you're paying for.
Well, and isn't that true of most things it's in true life?
Life, yeah.
You know, I mean, I liken it to particle physics. You get a particle up to 50% the speed of light, and then it takes 100 times the energy to boost it another 5%.
Yeah.
Because as you get faster and faster, as you get more and more quality, the cost goes up exponentially. It's true in a lot of areas.
Well, I don't need a speed of light home theater. I'm happy to go, you know, only 100,000.
Well, let me tell you this. The March home theater of the month, I think, was on the order of $25,000.
Yeah, that's so a little closer. Yeah.
Did everything himself. It was all sweat equity. Yeah. And it's beautiful. It's a great home theater, too.
Yeah. This is always a fun column to read. I love it.
Thank you.
Promontory. Yeah, it's fun. Theater is the home theater of the month. AVSforum.com. Do you still do the AVS podcast on YouTube too?
Nope. I let that go because I was having too much fun with Home Theater Geeks.
Well,
that's right.
Thank you, Scott. I appreciate it.
You bet.
Scott Wilkinson, Home Theater Geek, AVSforum.com. We'll see you again next month.
You bet. Happy to be here.
I am going to show you something now from our sponsor, AG1, that is awesome. You've seen these ads for AG1. I don't know about you, but I take I did a lot of different supplements, bottle after bottle after bottle of supplements, and pretty soon it just kind of is overwhelming. Wouldn't it be nice to have something that did it all in one little packet? You're going to need a smaller cabinet, they say in this box. This is AG1. It was founded in 2010. And now I keep meeting people like Aunt Prue, say, oh, yeah, I've been using that for years. Like many others, like you probably, I wanted to support health without more supplements. It was just getting out of control. I had bottle after bottle. So I found AG1. And now everything I need in one daily nutritional drink. In fact, I'm going to make my AG1 drink right now. This is kit that comes with it. You've got a nice shaker bottle. And also, I should point out, and I haven't used this, but you also get a canister and a scoop, a really nice stainless steel scoop. But instead, I'm going to use these AG1 pouches. You can also get these are great for travel. One pouch has everything you need, all of your supplements, long-term gut health, 75 high quality vitamins, minerals, pre and probiotics, all in this package. It's a climate neutral certified company. Athletic Greens is the name of the company. They believe that good nutrition should be available for everyone. In fact, for every purchase, they donate to organizations helping to get more nutritious food to kids in need. Now I'm watching because Jammer B is standing by with a paper towel, but I think I'm going to do this perfectly. Now, the most important thing, and you might have tried these kind of supplement drinks before, and I've tried a number of them. This one tastes really, really good. No artificial sweeteners. All the ingredients are high quality, made in New Zealand in the highest quality standards for, vitamins and supplements. So, you know, there's nothing bad in here. Look how easily this shakes up. And it tastes fantastic. I'm going to be drinking this for the rest of the show. I love it. If you're looking for a simpler, cost-effective supplement routine, this is it. AG1 from Athletic Greens. In fact, right now, I actually have my vitamin D dropper. You'll get a 1-year supply of vitamin D and five free travel packs of the ones I just showed you with your first purchase of a subscription. It's so good. I tried to offer it to John. He said, I'm not going to drink out of your AG1. It's actually delicious. You get the extra vitamin D, the travel packs. I love the travel packs because I used to have to go through a big process before I would go out on a trip with pill minders and all that stuff. Now it's easy. AthleticGreens.com/tech guy. AthleticGreens.com/tech guy for that special deal. Do check it out. Go and read the label. It's got vitamins, minerals, supplements, pre and probiotics too. And so it really is, it helps your gut health as well. It's really great. And I love this little shaker kit and the whole thing. AG1. See, didn't make a mess, John. Perfect. He doesn't believe me. AthleticGreens.com/tech guy. We thank him so much for their support of the show. You support us by going to that address. Make sure you do that. AG1. James is on the horn, on the line. Let me press the buttons and bring him into our lovely Stargate. Hello, James. Welcome to the show.
How are you, bud?
Oh, I'm great. Good to see you. So nice to see people. Cool. Oh, you're wearing your Haas shirt.
You got
to
support the local guys.
Yeah.
Right?
The only American supported team.
Yeah, for Haas now, F1. At least.
And you know
for
what?
Now. We'll see.
We'll see. Yeah, the Andretti's are trying to get into the act, which is great. Yep. I hope they do. Good for you. Yeah, I have to say, I love watching Formula One racing. I guess you're supposed to pick a team. It does make it a little bit more fun. I'm always secretly rooting for Haas, but this year I think I'm going to go for Fernando Alonso. I got the hat and the thing.
He's the old guy.
Gotta support the old guy, right?
You guys got to stick together. Oh, I get it.
All of 42.
I'm a new Alonso fan, too, because he's doing so well this year.
And what a great driver. Yeah, what a great driver. Don't tell me anything about the race today. I don't want to know.
Well, they're in the formation lap right now. Actually, I wanted to talk F1 with you.
Let's get through it so you can watch the race. I am a new fan. And, you know, I'm not alone. Thanks to that Netflix show, Drive to Survive, F1 is exploding, especially in the U.S. It's huge. And this is the Miami race today. Hundreds of thousands of people at that race. Then there'll be Austin and Las Vegas. So have you been a longtime fan?
Yeah, I've been a fan since 2010, I think, right before they went with the hybrid engines.
Nice.
I used to watch with my dad when we were kids.
So. Oh, that's great.
Very fun.
Yeah.
I was just wondering, how do you watch the races? Do you just watch ESPN or are you an F1 TV subscriber?
I subscribe to F1 TV. Last year I watched I love Crofty, who's the Sky Sports announcer. He's the famous, and it's lights out at Imola. love Crofty and love watching him. But ESPN, you know, they only show the race. They don't show practice. They do show qualifying in the race. You miss some of it. Sometimes they stick an ad in there, which really makes me nuts. So this year I paid for it. It wasn't very expensive. F1 TV, I think it was $150 for the whole season. And they have some really nice features. For one thing, you can listen to Crofty, but you can also listen to the F1 announcers, who tend to be a little more technical. And so that's fun, but they also have lots of extra, you know, pre-race, post-race, pre-quali, post-quali. They have a lot of extra shows. They have some extra educational stuff. My favorite new feature, which I really love, and ESPN can't do this because they're, you know, a broadcast channel. You can pick the camera for any car and watch that car go through its lap and even hear the radio, the team radio.
And that's fantastic.
I find that so much fun. Have you tried that?
Oh, yeah. So I'm an F1 TV subscriber, and I'm going to give you a tip on that.
Oh, please do.
If you do a search for F1 Multiviewer, and it's just some guy, a fan just like you and me, who made it's kind of an add-on to the F1 TV subscription. What he does is he gives you all those cameras and everything like that. And then he also, I don't know where he's getting it, but he's pulling live timing data from F1, and he has a whole interface that shows you in utmost detail how the cars are doing in per sector, how their tires are doing, and it's just fantastic.
This is the kind of information that engineers have.
Exactly.
They're looking at. And it really, you know, you have to be kind of ADD to do this because you got a lot of stuff coming at you. What I will do is I'll rewind and watch an interesting lap over again. Mm-hmm. And I guess I could do that. So what the name of it is called F1?
It's just do a search for F1 Multiviewer.
And you just hook it into your F1 account, F1 TV.
Yeah,
account.
So when you launch it, it asks for your F1 TV credentials and it signs you in and it's basically just your account, but just with this overlay. Of the stuff that he's
build
created.
Your own pit wall. Are you doing that?
Yeah.
Do you have about 18 screens going?
I actually do have a little setup here. I have it minimized so I can talk to you. But
I'm going to let you go watch the race. But how exciting! How exciting!
Give that a try.
Now, do you have a particular driver you're a fan of? I mean, first of all, everybody loves Günther Steiner because he became a star thanks to Drive to Survive. Haas has not been the strongest team. They're kind of in the back of the pack. But Günther is hysterical.
Yeah, no, he's great to watch.
He's made it. He's made the Haas team, I think, a very fun team to watch. Yeah,
he just wrote a memoir to him.
Oh, I'll be reading that. Yeah.
It's going to be interesting.
I should call it the MoneyGram Haas F1 team now.
That's
what they call it now because they got to
get their
sponsor.
Money somewhere.
Yeah. So do you have a favorite driver?
I like Lando Norris. He's pretty cool. I have drivers
Lando.
That I don't like more than drivers that I do like. I'm really not a Verstappen fan, but yeah, that's just me.
You know, I'm with you. I'm with you. He's a little cranky. He is the best driver easily with the best car easily.
He won the championship.
But I'm rooting for Checo today. We'll see.
Yeah. We'll hope Checo wins the championship this year. Actually,
I would love that. That would really make it exciting.
Under him.
Yeah. He's the other Red Bull. There's two Red Bull drivers. Max Verstappen, world champion 2 years in a row now. Really, truly a great driver. But Checo Perez, who is from Mexico, is just lovable and a great driver in his own right and has always been kind of second fiddle to Max over the last few years. Be fun to watch him. He's only 6 points behind as we begin today. Go watch the race. Don't tell me what happens, though.
No, no spoilers.
It should be a very exciting start because it's a very weird.
And we might get rain. There's a small chance of rain. So we'll see.
That always makes it interesting, too, when they get out the wets. Hey, a pleasure talking to you. Thank you for calling and thank you for the recommendation.
Thanks, Leo. I just want to say, too, I'm real glad that Scott Wilkinson is back on Twit.
Yeah,
I'm a huge fan of his. Yeah. I watch his show every week.
Me too. By the way, this multiviewer is Windows, Mac, and Linux.
Yeah.
Bravo.
Yeah, this guy's real cool. He's got a Discord server. You can chat with him during the race. He's a great guy.
Unofficial desktop client for F1 TV. I'll be putting this on my 55-inch Linux box.
Oh, yeah.
Watching the race tonight. Hey, thank you so much. It's great to see you.
Take care, Leo.
Have a great day. Take care. Bye-bye. Again, if you want to call, the Zooms are open. Yes, I see your hand, Dr. Mom. I'll get to you here in a second. The Zooms are open. It is call.twit.tv. That's the easiest way to do it. Actually, on your phone, you've got a microphone and a camera on your phone. It makes it very easy. I promise we will have a phone number soon. I'm hoping even next week when Micah comes back. Micah taking the week off this week. Good for him. We had to make him. Episode 1973. And we also have a bunch of emails, which we'll be getting to. ATG@twit.tv if you want to send us an email. By the way, videos are great. Do we have any videos, John Ashley, in the email? No. Just printed ones. So we'll get to that. But bring Dr. Mom into the Stargate, if you will. Hello, Lil. You're at home. Uh-oh. Is she muted? Is that us or her? Looks like it's us. Looks like it's her. Unmute your mic there, doctor. Good doctor. Gosh, I'm really tempted now to watch the game, watch the race on my multi.
I am unmuted.
There we go.
Okay, you can hear me?
Happy May the 4th. Belated May the 4th.
Now, here's your joke of the day.
Okay.
It was May the 4th. Then we had Cinco de Mayo.
Yeah.
Well, yesterday was Revenge of the 6th.
Revenge of the 6th yesterday. And John Ashley is applauding solo all by himself.
Okay.
Are you a Star Wars fan, Lil?
The original Star Wars, yes, before it got crazy.
Well, you and I are of an age where we saw it when we were adults. I was 21 when the original Star Wars came out, or 20.
I saw it in a theater in New York City when I had just moved there. Hang on, let me kill my phone, which is barking at me.
Oh, that wasn't a dog. That was your phone?
That was my phone.
Very
my
realistic.
BFF has a dog. So that's your sound.
Very but realistic.
I was with some friends in a theater in Times Square watching this movie. And remember, I'm from California. And a subway rolled by underneath. Well, if you've ever been in an earthquake, you know the sound of an earthquake.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought I was about to die in a theater in New York City. They said, why are you turning? I turned white and I
grabbed the arms. Boy, that Death Star really is very authentic.
Yeah. I mean, I thought the theater was going to collapse.
Was a terrible force felt throughout the galaxy when it went under there?
Yes, but I was the only person who thought that we were having an earthquake in New York.
The sound of 1,000 voices screaming?
Yep.
You know, it's
and
funny
because
in hindsight, I mean, look at how long ago was that? 1977. I mean, we're talking almost 50 years. It'll be 50 years in just a few years. And of course, special effects, all of those were pre-CGI. They were all done in camera. And we've come so far. And yet it was such a great movie. And we'd never seen anything like it. Right. So it was.
Well, I didn't even like it when they remade it. And remember, they put in all those extra things.
Yeah, they blew it.
CGI.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, that was a bad idea.
You had to have fun with it. I mean, this was pirates. This was cowboys and Indians.
Yeah, it was cartoons.
It was all the old movies thrown together.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, I agree. Lil, what can we do for you? Actually, before you do that, Lil is also our unofficial Amazon Echo expert. And I think there's always new stuff coming along down the pipe from Amazon. Is there
not yet, but I don't know if you mentioned it because I was gone for a couple of weeks. They've discontinued the Halo. They've dropped it.
Yes, we've been talking about that. I bought one of those bands. It was a health band. And it wasn't a bad idea. In fact, they were even about to release a display version of it so it would compete with the Fitbit.
It wasn't that good. I remember they did their body fat analysis by taking pictures of you with your phone.
Yes. Did you do that? Because, you know, Stacy got one. The reason I have one is Stacy got one and she found out she had to pose in front of the camera naked and send it back to Amazon. She said, well, I'm not going to do that. She sent it to me. I said, I'll do it. I don't care. So somebody at Amazon has a picture of me. Big deal. Nobody's going to do anything with it. But I don't blame Stacy. Did you do it?
I tried it and I found out I could change my body fat by 15% by sucking my stomach in.
That's not good. That's not an accurate. No. That's not an accurate measure.
That's the point. It was not accurate at all.
Yeah.
But nothing new right now that's coming down the pike. I mean, I'm waiting for some stuff. I got an offer to buy the Astro.
I saw that. You sent me an email. That's the robot that no one wants that basically has a telescoping camera so Amazon can wander around your house and look at stuff.
Oh, I thought I told you to be quiet. I snoozed it for an hour and she's still barking at me.
By the way, I imagine that's exactly the reaction a pet would have if this thing starts wandering around your house and telescoping up and down.
I guarantee you my dog would try and eat the thing.
Yes.
But they said, by the way, you've just gotten it, but the trial period's done, so now you have to pay full freight. And I said, no, thank
you. Forget it. That was one of those Amazon day one experiments.
Right.
And
the only day one I've ever liked was the note sticky notes
print. I was just going to say, that's the one I got. And I love it because, you know, you can print out blank sticky notes. You can print out tic-tac-toe games. More usefully, you could print out shopping lists and other things.
So exactly.
I think that's cool.
Or print out a sticky note and stick it on the board for my husband to see and stuff.
To-do lists. Yeah, it's great.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, I have an intriguing tech question for you today.
As always. Go ahead, Lil.
Okay. You know that now with phones, iPhones, Android phones, tablets and stuff, you have the option to a virtual MAC address. Supposedly increases security.
Yes, it rotates through them every 15 minutes, actually.
Right. It gave my home Eero fits.
Oh, yeah.
I finally had to turn it off on everything because I was noticing all of a sudden I'm getting a new connection. And then I'm looking at the Eero DHCP table and the device is there multiple times, disconnected, disconnected, connected. And sometimes it didn't even recognize the device. Now, Should I leave it on when I leave the house or just leave the dang thing off?
So the idea, the theory is your MAC address, which is associated with any network device, has a long number associated with it that's unique. The first part of the MAC address is the manufacturer. So that's how it, they make it unique. So every manufacturer has a pool of numbers, fairly large pool of numbers they can assign serially. So every device, your network card, your laptop's network card, your Eero, anything that's on a network will have a unique MAC address. Of course, that's useful for the network devices. They can see stuff. But the theory Apple's going by is, well, if somebody can see your MAC address, A, they know what they're looking at because it tells you the manufacturer. So you know immediately, I'm looking at an Apple device, probably an iPhone. But B, it's unique, and so I could use it to track you. So, and it's not hard to see a MAC address. All Wi-Fi traffic has the MAC address bundled in with it. You're sending it out all the time. So Apple, I think Google started to do this as well, has now rotating the MAC addresses to spoof them. So your MAC address is different every 15 minutes, which, you know, does reduce tracking. I guess, as always with these things, it depends on what, and we use this term a lot, your threat model is. And all that means is how worried you are that you're going to get attacked. So if you were somebody, if you were Elon Musk, you know, he hates it that that guy posts his assassination coordinates, the location of his private jet. He feels like that is a threat to his personal security. You probably would want to use this. Keep that feature turned on. It is on by default, I should mention. You'd want to use this because there is an actual threat that somebody might be tracking you. I don't think anybody's tracking you or me, Lil.
I would hope not. But I just noticed all of a sudden it was giving my Eero system fits.
That's a little frustrating to me, especially because the Eero folks are all ex-Apple people. It shouldn't cause a problem for them. Maybe it has to do with, it probably has to do with their what they call QoS, their quality of service, where they pay attention to what everything is in your network, and they will give you more packets if you're watching a streaming TV device versus collecting email. So I bet you it's associated with their QoS.
Well, the other thing I know is if I was moving between units, because I have thick walls in the house, so I've got a lot of Eeros, you know, hardwired into the main one, and I would sit there and I'd go from one side of the house to the other, and I think the MAC address changed during the interim. The system went, what? What's going on here?
Apple,
it's a new device.
I'm looking at the Apple page. It's under Apple Platform Security. Apple says that Wi-Fi scans don't happen while trying to connect to a preferred Wi-Fi network. In other words, they don't randomize on your Eero, they say.
Yeah.
So it may not be that's what's causing the issue, although it's interesting when you turn it off, you don't have the issue, huh?
I turned it off on my work phone, my personal phone, and my tablet, and the issue went away.
That's interesting. Now, one thing you could do fairly easily is create a shortcut that when you get home, it turns it off. And when you leave home, it turns it on. You know, I mean, not easily, but you could do that. I guess it depends on how easy it is for you to do shortcuts. But Apple says, that's very interesting. Under address randomization, it does not happen when you're on a preferred Wi-Fi network. Maybe try saying, the Eero is preferred. Don't forget that kind of thing on all of those devices. Well,
does that apply to Google too? Because I have an Android phone. Do they have?
Believe Google is doing it now. Apple did it first, and I think
I know it. Google's doing it because I checked on my phone and it was doing it.
Yeah, they started.
I don't know if they have that situation where if I move from place to place.
Well, if you think about it, it makes perfect sense that Apple should do it when you're out and about, and it makes no sense that Apple should do it when you're at home.
Right.
So, and Apple says that's exactly how it works. Make sure that you have that Eero set up as a preferred Wi-Fi. You know, don't forget, always join this network when I'm here. Maybe that's what it needs. There's a good long technical article. We'll put this in the show notes describing how this randomization works. Peer-to-peer Wi-Fi connections, randomized. Personal hotspot, randomized. It's interesting. It literally says in the very beginning, we don't do this when you're on a preferred network. And they should.
Like I said, I turned it off for every phone in the house and the tablets, and the problem stopped.
Really interesting.
But, you know, it's a mix. it's a mixed ecosystem. It was Android device and multiple Android tablets.
I would, this would be a good one to ask Eero about. Just, you know, drop him a line and say, you know, what's your response to this? Because you're, I would guess most of their users are using some sort of Apple devices.
I did actually ask them, and they said, we see packet collisions. And I'm like, okay.
Wow, that's...
That's their stock answer to everything.
That's a terrible they don't answer. Know what, of course you see packet collisions.
If they don't know what's going on, they see loopbacks and packet collisions.
Oh, loopbacks.
But they see them both, and that's their stock answer, which is, of course, not what the problem is.
Yeah. There's something wrong because it's not supposed to do it. So I would go into your settings, make sure that it there may be some setting. In iOS, it's supposed to be, you could say, no, this is a preferred network. Don't do this. And that's ideal because you still do. I mean, again, you could leave it off. I don't think there's any harm. For instance, Apple, when they add that private relay feature, which is kind of like a mini VPN, it was on by default for people who are Apple One subscribers or buy iCloud service. It caused so many problems in so many different areas. I just turned it off. I stopped using it. It did not help. It made things worse. And maybe this is one to turn off. I don't know.
This is the only people who want to track me now are those anti-vaxxers.
I know. Nobody cares. Nobody cares where I am. You can have my assassination
coordinates. I'm going to remind everybody, the federal health emergency is ending next week.
Yes.
So
I saw that.
If you were getting any free things like test kits and stuff, get them before the 11th. After that, they're not free anymore.
It's not just federal. It's international. The World Health Organization has declared the COVID crisis over. Now, you're a physician. We should mention, we call her Dr. Mom because she's a physician. And I know you follow this very closely. In fact, you're a great source of information for me throughout the pandemic. Thank you, Lil. What's your opinion of that? Is it over?
It's over in the sense that we have it under control. The hospitals are not being overwhelmed. People are not dying at the same rates they do. It's never going away. That's like saying flu is over.
Right.
Or measles is over.
Right.
Or mumps is over. It's in our population. It's endemic. We are not going to get rid of it.
Get your vaccine. So, get your booster.
I just had my second booster.
I've had five. So, Lisa wants six.
Lisa's right. My problem is I'm now, every time you took one, remember you got magnetized? I'm now magnetizing six planes of existence, which means I should be popping into the alternative.
Absolutely. Those lizard people are just waiting for you now. They know you'll be there any minute.
I don't dare walk through a hardware store because the washers and the nails and stuff are going to come flying off the shelves and hit me.
By the way, I did wear a mask at some points in our, we were in Europe for 3 weeks.
Right.
Mostly in air travel and in airports and things like that. But nobody was wearing masks in Spain, Italy, Morocco, Portugal, and I didn't. And I didn't catch anything. But yeah, well, I like the idea of not getting the flu and not getting cold. So I might, there are times when I'll probably continue to wear masks.
India's getting hit right now.
Oh, boy.
So we're keeping our fingers crossed it doesn't come across.
So that new variant that everybody was...
That's Indian.
Yeah.
It's India.
People were worried about that. Jury's still out. We don't know.
Well, you've heard that term police things, a person of concern.
Yes.
This is a variant of concern.
Yeah.
We're going to
call it Arcturus. It has some strange.
Yes. Arcturus. We're going now with star names.
We ran out of ABBBBZZZ.
Well, we're now down to X's. So we got things to fix.
Arcturus. We'll use Star Wars names. Hey, may the fourth be with you. I have
the entire Greek alphabet and everything.
Scooter X, who is a wizard of Google, has come up with the Eero support document. Does Eero support devices that use MAC address randomization? And it says you should not have a problem.
Well, they're wrong.
Yeah. Eero networks use MAC addresses as unique identifiers to provide connectivity, as do all Wi-Fi devices. For devices that change the MAC address between connections, there are a few things to keep in mind. For instance, a device that randomizes address might not be identifiable and will show up with an unknown type in the mobile
app.
Right,
all the time.
You've seen that.
All the time.
And some of the Eero features depend on consistent MAC addresses, including DHCP reservations, pausing and blocking devices, new device. So they say, can I disable MAC address randomization on my devices? They say it's an effective way to maintain privacy in public settings, but your Eero network is managed. You don't need it in private settings On certain devices, you can disable it when joining your Eero network. So I think that's what you want to look for. Since iOS 14, they've had this ability. And it also says Android 10 and up have this ability to disable
it. I turned it off.
Yeah.
Turned it off and the problem went away.
Lil, you're a genius. And you're also
I'm an old-fashioned hacker. I just sat there and said, okay, what can I turn off?
You're also a good friend. And here you're on the road again.
Yep. I was in Vegas and then Toronto.
And where are you going next?
Right now, I'm home for 6 weeks, and looking at Portland. I'm looking at Portland. I'm looking possibly at D.C., Tampa.
Are you a traveling physician? Do you do this as work?
No, what I do is, right now, my traveling road show is neurodiversity, which is the politically correct term for autism disorder.
Love that. Yes.
And how it affects access to health care.
Love it. Great subject. Great subject. Keep doing you're doing God's work there, Lil. Thank you.
I'm not sure God wants me.
Well, we do. We do.
Okay.
Stay tuned. Johnny Jett, travel guru, coming up. He'll help you travel like a rock star using technology. Thanks, Dr. Mom. Take care.
Okay.
One more email before we get to Johnny Jett. And this is from a dad. Okay, Carl. Carl says, I'm the dad that gets all my kids' tech hand-me-downs. Oh, he's getting the tech hand-me-downs from the kids. See, my kids get the tech hand-me-downs from dad. Anyway, and for my limited online usage, that's fine. What I'd like to do is set up my Dell Inspiron 3593 to be kind of like a Mac Mini, where I could connect a large monitor via HDMI and USB keyboard and mouse, then close the laptop. Is that possible? That's one of the things Apple did that I thought was a really cool feature. They did pretty early on with their laptops. They had a feature that you could close the lid, but the laptop would sense that it was hooked up to a monitor, and it would operate essentially exactly as you say, Carl, as a Mac Mini. Some Windows machines will allow that. Some won't. I think it's hardware specific. Dell Inspiron's kind of older, so I suspect it will not. How could he do that? Any thoughts, chat room or Discord? Our Discordians are Club Twit members. And they are as helpful as the folks in the IRC. You can join.
So is he trying to get his computer onto a screen without the laptop monitor?
Yeah, what he wants to do is hook it up, then close the laptop, stick it somewhere, and still have it operate as a PC. You see what I'm saying? That's what you can do.
I think you can do. I mean, is he using Windows? What's the?
I presume he's using Windows. Yeah, he doesn't say which Windows.
He should be able to disable the monitor, on the laptop.
Disable the laptop monitor, and then it will continue to operate when you close the lid.
There is a setting in there somewhere in Windows. But mind you, I'm on Windows 10, so I haven't really seen that on Windows 11 yet.
We should mention that voice you hear is not the voice of God or of John Ashley. That's Benito, our technical director, who is an expert in this kind of stuff. So that's something to look for. Disable the external monitor. I mean, the internal monitor, rather.
Yeah, and then there would be a setting in like a power setting somewhere.
Right.
To like not turn off the computer.
This is basically, clamshell mode is what this is called. And Aunt Pruitt saying a docking station. That's for sure true, right?
And there's also, John Ashley just showed me a setting that says if you right-click on the bottom right on your display settings, there's a setting to be second to screen only, and that will turn off, presumably, that'll turn off the laptop display.
I think it's specific to hardware as well as the operating system. Here is a Dell community post on a Latitude. Whether this will work on an Inspiron, I don't know. It turned out there's a way to keep the laptop display on when enclosing the lid in BIOS power management. There's an option lid switch. When disabled, the display stays on even with the lid closed. So you can disable. See, that's exactly what's happening is there is a physical switch on the lid which communicates to the operating system. The lid is closed. Put the computer to sleep. You could try disabling sleep. You could try hooking up a dock or hook up an external monitor. But if your BIOS has a setting to disable that switch, that's all you would need to do because it wouldn't know. Another positive thing about this option is that if the laptop is in sleep mode and the lid is open, the sleep mode continues. So that's something to be aware of. So reboot your machine and go into setup. right? On the Dells, I think it's F2. I can't remember, but go into setup. Maybe it's delete. Anyway, there's a key you hit while you're rebooting. It'll put you in setup and look for a lid switch option. It's under power management. I don't know if the Inspiron has that, but that's possible. And then Dan in our IRC is saying, you don't have to do that in Windows power settings. You can set what happens when the lid is closed. I remember that, right? That's that sleep or not sleep or hibernate or not. All right. Joe has a screenshot. Wow, you guys, you really come through when I ask you. That's the one. When I close the lid on battery sleep, plugged in, do nothing. See if that'll work. Is that, Joe, is that Windows 10 or Windows 11? Looks like Windows 7. It's the old control panel, isn't it? So that probably would work. Okay. I'm going to take a little break. When we come back, we are going to go traveling with our traveling man, Johnny Jett. I'm so excited. He'll be joining us in just a little bit. But first, a word from our sponsor, those good folks at Melissa. Melissa, M-E-L-I-S-S-A, is a global data quality, identity verification, and address management solutions provider. I would say the top one. I think that's what G2 Crowd says. They're the best. In fact, Melissa's clean suite and data quality suite have again been named leader by G2, the leading peer-to-peer software platform, in the 2023 Data Quality and Address Verification Spring Report. That's not a surprise. Melissa's been named momentum leader and high performer in the same reports over the years, many times across the small business, mid-market, and enterprise segments. Melissa's received many recognitions, including good partner, easiest to do business with, easiest setup, highest user adoption, easiest admin. But what does it do? Well, if you're in business, you need Melissa, especially for the, by the way, ranked highly in the price category, clean suite and data quality suite. But it's ranked highly, it means the price is low, not high, right? Melissa's team believes data quality should never cost more than it saves, and continues to offer affordable, high-quality solutions for data quality and address verification. In many businesses, you have to do this. Thanks to banking laws, know your customer laws, you need to have address verification. But you also want it because poor quality data can cost you money, a lot of it. In fact, an average of $15 million a year. Customers that you can't reach because you've got the wrong address or the wrong email or the wrong phone number. And the longer that bad data stays in your system, the more losses you're going to accumulate. Melissa eliminates waste and lost opportunities from incorrect mailings, improves customer satisfaction with seamless real-time identity verification tools. Their matching and deduplication tools will help you establish a single high-quality customer record, linking all customer touch points. So you've got this real single source of truth and an ideal 360-degree view of each customer, because you can actually add to that customer information with all kinds of demographic information and longitude and latitude, things like that. Melissa complies with the United States Postal Service's move update requirements, which assures the most current address data. They actually process directly through the USPS's National Change of Address database. And that's true not just in the United States, but all over the world. They operate in almost every country and territory, more than 200 all over the world. And they've been doing it since 1985. Since 1985, Melissa has specialized in global intelligence solutions to help organizations unlock accurate data for a more compelling customer view. Because they've been doing this so long, it's gotten, you know, this business has gotten more and more sophisticated, more and more complex. And Melissa has been continually improving their service and getting better and better. Oh, and you know another thing they do continuously? They make sure your data is secure. They undergo continuous independent security audits to reinforce their commitment to data security, privacy, and compliance requirements. They're SOC 2 compliant, HIPAA compliant, GDPR compliant. So you know your data is in the best hands. Make sure your customer contact data is up to date. Get started today with 1,000 records cleaned for free at melissa.com/twit. We love these guys. Been a great partner for years. We use them and you should too. Melissa, melissa.com/twit. We thank them so much for their support. You support us too when you use that address. melissa.com/twit. Ladies and gentlemen, I didn't see the sign. Is Johnny Jet here? He's here. He's in the Magic Tech Guys Stargate. Hello, JJ.
Hello. How you doing?
So great to see you. How's everything in your life?
Everything's going great. How was your trip?
Oh, man, Johnny. I forgot how much I love to travel. It's been a long time since we've done something like that. And it was, remember that movie, If It's Tuesday, We Must Be in Belgium?
I do not.
It was a long time before your time, but it was a movie about touring and traveling and be a new country every day. And it was kind of like this. I think in our 3-week trip, we visited 8 different countries. If you include Vatican City, the world's smallest country.
That counts.
That counts. And we had so much fun. And I have to say, I fell in love with Rome. I think my new favorite city. Lisa still says Paris is her favorite. That's 2 very nice cities to have as your favorite. But Rome is very approachable. I was surprised. I expected this big metropolis like Milan. And because they can't dig in the old part of Rome, there's no high rises. Because as soon as you start putting something in, they go, oh, stop. You found another Roman ruin.
Yeah, we found Julius Caesar's tomb.
Yeah, the archaeologists have to come in, and that's that. So it's really like wandering through history and the food and the people. Anyway, we had a wonderful time. I love travel.
And how was the cruise? Was it Silver Sea?
It was Silver Sea. Very high-end, hyper luxury, small boat, 600 people. And we really loved it. You know, the internet seems to be getting better on cruise ships. Have you noticed
Definitely. Well, I haven't been on a cruise in 3 years, but I've heard.
One of the things that you kind of embrace when you travel on a boat is, well, we're going to be out of touch. You know, Lisa tells the staff, hey, forget it. I'm not going to be available because internet on shipboard is usually really unusable. Very, very slow. You can get email maybe, but not something you'd want to, use for work. That's all changed. The last 2 times we've been on a ship, it's been, on Silver Sea, this was almost as fast as at home.
Wow.
Yeah. And one of the things I know Royal Caribbean, the parent company, has been doing is putting Starlink on many of their ships. I don't think we had Starlink yet, but it was something better than usual. I was very happy. And of course, we have our phones. So when we get close to the shore, we're able to use those as hotspots. But we were in touch and Lisa got a lot of work done. I even did a commercial.
Did you really?
Yeah, from Morocco.
So right when you get on the ship, you put your phone in the airplane mode, correct? And put the Wi-Fi on.
Tell me why I want to do that.
Why?
Yeah.
So you don't have a huge bill when you get off the ship. Because I learned that the hard way.
They have cellular at sea, it's called. But really, you should call it taking my money.
I mean, there's no reason. You can just do Wi-Fi.
It's very, very expensive. Yeah. And I guess it's offered as a convenience. But don't make a phone call from your cell phone when you're in the middle of the ocean, because it's going to cost you a lot of money.
Yeah, but were you able to make a VoIP call using Skype or?
Yeah, I don't know if it was that fast. I didn't try. We didn't try streaming or VoIP, but it was fast enough that you could surf websites, which in the past, I have to say, website was too slow to use. Certainly email was fast enough. I think we were fine. Now, remember, most cruises, you're in a port almost every day. So if we needed phone calls, we could do that from the port. And I have Google Fi. And Lisa had Verizon. That's another thing that's changed with travel is Verizon used to be very expensive overseas roaming. But now they have pretty good international plans. It wasn't bad at all.
But didn't T-Mobile buy them?
Verizon.
Did that go through?
About. Verizon, not Sprint. You're talking about Mint Mobile. And Mint Mobile is not a good choice for overseas, our sponsor. No. We love Mint Mobile, but they do not offer the same plans at T-Mobile. I had T-Mobile and Google Fi, 2 different phones. T-Mobile worked fine. I never hit that thing where it slows down to 3G. But as I said, and so those are nice because T-Mobile doesn't charge you extra. Google Fi doesn't charge you extra. They charge the same amount as you would stateside. But Verizon, which has international roaming plans, does charge you extra. But I have to say it worked quite well, and it wasn't that it was less expensive than I expected. I think it was $5 a day, I think, something like that.
Right.
Yeah.
It's pretty darn good.
Yeah. And then I used that Polar Steps thing. Scooter X has already put the link in our chat room. Remember, that was the travel diary that I wanted.
Yes. How'd that go?
Worked out really well. I mean, I probably bored people to tears. It's like being able to do a virtual slideshow. And I put a lot of pictures.
It's archived, right? Can I still find it?
Yeah, it's still there. And it was our lots of pictures, and I didn't bring a fancy camera. Lisa did. I didn't bring a fancy camera. You know what the Polar Steps does is it sees your phone and it actually makes a map of your travels automatically. And then each day you can put the pictures in from that day and write a little bit of text. It's not big on the text. It's mostly big on the pictures. Oh, and one other thing I wanted to show you, the Polaris Lounge at SFO, the new United Polaris Lounge, is spectacular.
Nice.
Lounges, airport lounges often are not very good. We were in an airport lounge in Rome that was terrible. But the Polaris Lounge at SFO is massive.
Yes.
And beautiful. I was really pleased. I did a 360-degree video of it. I'll have to upload. But it was really fantastic.
I definitely want to see that.
Yeah. I know you're an airport lounge aficionado.
Well, I flew the other day from JFK to LAX, and I visited all Americans' five lounges in Terminal 8 in JFK.
Why do they have five lounges?
Because I got upgraded to first class so I could go to any lounge. I went to the top one, Chelsea, first.
Is that the one where you could go out in the balcony and watch the planes?
No, they don't have an American. That's Delta.
Okay. That's Delta. I like that. I really liked that.
Me too. I'm an av geek.
Yeah.
But I visited all five lounges, and you know what? The top swanky one is not one for me. I like the in the middle.
See?
Yeah.
You can't.
Better windows.
Yeah. You can't assume. But United, I guess, is putting in these Polaris lounges in a handful of airports, and they're swanky. They're huge. This is one thing I found with airport lounges. They're often jammed, crowded. And that's not a good experience. We were in a lounge.
The Delta ones these days.
We went to an American Express Centurion lounge in Rome. And it was so full, you know, there was no free seats, except there were reserved tables. And people would keep sitting down at the reserved tables, and the woman would come over and kick them out. And I finally said, well, who gets to sit at these reserved tables? Do you have a black card? I do not.
I have not seen that yet.
So, if you have your guaranteed seat, if you have a black card. Nobody ever sat in it, by the way. It was one guy.
Well, I downgraded my platinum card, which got me into the Amex Centurion lounges during the pandemic, and I need to re-up it. But
it's an expensive luxury, but if you travel a lot.
Plus, the lounges have always been packed, so I haven't added it back, but I will.
What else?
By the way, I was in New York this week for Airbnb. They brought me out for a press conference with the CEO, Brian Chesky.
Brian Chesky. They are on a PR blitz right now.
Totally.
I mean, why?
They introduced 50 new changes this week. And they had this big announcement, summer announcement. And there's five that I'm actually really excited about.
I think people are getting a little unhappy about Airbnb on both sides of the coin. Cities don't like it because it's eating up all the living spaces. People are taking their apartments, turning them into Airbnbs. It's putting hotels out of business. Plus, there's nowhere for people to rent. So cities are starting to ban Airbnb or limit the number of Airbnb places that they can have. I know Rome is doing that. And then
you need 30 days or more.
Yeah.
A lot of the cities are saying you have to, if you're going to rent a place, it has to be 30 days or more, or you can rent a room in someone's home.
Yeah. And then, of course, on the other side, Airbnb customers, of which I'm one, often complain about these obnoxious, intrusive Airbnb landlords. One of the things sometimes you'll find, there's all these extra chores you have to do when you check out. Exactly. There's also concern about cameras in the Airbnbs. I don't know how legitimate that is, but it certainly makes people nervous. So I think Airbnb has needed to kind of up its image. So what did Brian do? What did he suggest?
So he said that, you know, he admitted that he spends too much time on Twitter, and he's been looking at all this feedback, and a lot of it's negative, or most of it's negative. And so he said that they were trying to fix it. And, you know, you know, the top five things that I thought were the most important were that they created a priority helpline for travelers who are out on the road, and that they'll answer the call within 2 minutes. 90% of the calls will be answered within 2 minutes.
That's interesting, because they've been a hands-off company, right?
Totally. A lot of times people are really upset because they can't get a hold of the host. They can't get in. Can't find the keys.
Right.
So that's a big problem. It's one reason why I was reluctant to rent with them.
I mean, the principle of Airbnb is fantastic. And it was transformative. We used a lot of Airbnbs, and still that's kind of the way I'd like to travel, which is, you know, we want to get an Airbnb in Rome and spend 3 weeks or 2 or 3 weeks in Rome just to be kind of live like Romans do. And that's the best way to do that, not at a hotel. But
agreed.
But there's all these concerns, legitimate, I think.
So the other ones were like total price. You know, when you look at Airbnb when you used to last week, it would say, you know, $179 for the night. But then you'd click, you keep tapping, and the next thing you know, it has all these fees, and that goes up to like $500 a night. So now you can, you know, hit the toggle, and it will show you the total price from step one. So you know what you're getting into, which I think is great, because, you know, no one likes to be hit with hidden fees. And then the other thing that they're doing is, they're now allowing a much easier way to search for monthly rentals.
Yeah.
So, which has always been a dream of
mine. That's preferable. I would love to do that.
Spend a month, not only every month for a year.
Yeah.
Actually 12 months a year. I like to be in a different place each month. Would be a goal. My wife's like, that's not going to happen. We have two little kids. I can understand.
I can do that now, especially because internet's gotten fast enough. I could do this show, for instance, from Rome. Actually, I could use Father Robert's studio. That's probably what I would do. But you could be almost anywhere. If the internet is sufficient, Lisa could work. I could do shows. We could go somewhere for a month. We're not planning that, I should say. But I think it's kind of a dream. And that's one thing that's really changed. You can work from anywhere now. And thanks to COVID, every company in the world has kind of adjusted to that notion.
That was the best thing that came out of COVID. Bar none.
Yeah, I agree.
Is that you can work remotely. Also, the other good thing about COVID was that it got away with change fees for airlines, which was a huge sticking point for me. But another thing that they're doing, Airbnb, is that they're going back to their roots, which was, you know, these rooms. They realize that they think that the economy is going to tank. And they're like, listen, save money. Instead of renting a whole house, you rent someone's room, and there's going to be a host there, and they're going to have host profiles.
That's how it used to be, right? You were kind of, it was not exactly couch surfing, but it was like the guest room, the extra room. Yeah.
Right.
And that's what they're doing. I don't want to see.
No, I don't either.
I don't want to stay in somebody's house. I don't either, but you know,
they showed some of these examples and they looked amazing. And actually this guy, you know, the CEO, Brian, he says he rents out his place in San Francisco while he's there, and he makes them cookies from scratch.
Oh, well, there you go. That's nice. I guess, you know, what I would recommend if you're going to use Airbnb is read the reviews, right? Because
definitely
they can be pretty much trusted, I think.
Yeah. No, you can. And I would rent with a super host, someone who's been vetted.
Yes.
I mean, I think they all have been vetted, but I would go with, you know, someone that, you know, is one of their top renters.
Well, it's really, this is one of those things where technology changes the world and creates an unintended consequence, one of which was people got in the business of Airbnb. So they would buy rentals and they would start
buildings.
Yeah, they'd buy buildings. I mean, suddenly it's a whole business and it isn't really the original intent. I think this is a really good example of I think Airbnb was a great idea.
Incredible.
And then people start gaming it and messing with it. And it causes problems. I'm glad to see that they're responding to that. Do you think the things that they've proposed are going to make a difference?
I do. I actually, you know, especially the ones I just mentioned, I really think I'm actually excited to try it out. You know, I rented one during the Olympics, right before the Olympics in London, when hotels were crazy expensive.
Yeah.
And I was just so nervous. Will I be able to find the key? The guy told me he left the key underneath like the barbecue in the backyard. And I was like, you know, and these days you want to make sure you have the right house. You don't want to get shot. By going to
that's a good point. I didn't even think of that. So there also are competitors, and there's things like VRBO, Verbo, which is rent by owner. There are exchanges, home exchanges, which Paul Theroux used to do a lot of. There are other ways to do this. Do you know of other? Is Airbnb the best, do you think?
It all depends. I've used Vrbo many times and they're great too. I think you just have to see what's out there. It's, you know, with inventory, I think a lot of them use the same. I think a lot of homeowners will put their place on both Airbnb and Vrbo. But I would try everything. Some don't. So that's why you want to look at both places. Also, home exchanges. I mean, that whole movie with...
that was a wonderful. Was it the Holidays? Or
not the Holiday.
Yeah, you know, that was a wonderful
every
movie.
Year.
Yeah, yeah, I love that Christmas movie.
And actually, the company they use, I'm friends with the ex-CEO. Oh. He sold it. He lived in Hermosa Beach. And he said the director of the movie just called him up, said, "Can we use your website?" He's like, "Of course." There was no, he didn't pay any money for it. It was like free publicity. And I really helped the whole industry for home exchanges.
I also think that there are in certain cities, local agencies that do this and maybe do a little bit better. I know Paris, you stayed in Paris a couple of times, as I remember.
Paris Perfect.
It's called
Paris Perfect and London Perfect. These are luxury apartments. In London, they even rent out apartment that a Madonna used or owned.
Is it? Well, that's got to be pretty expensive, right?
It wasn't crazy expensive. They hosted me, full disclosure, but it wasn't that bad. I think it was like $500 or $700 a night, which is not crazy. I mean, there's some places you can rent for $20,000 a night.
I remember your Paris apartment was amazing.
Oh my God. You open up the window and the Eiffel Tower is right there.
Yeah.
I mean, we long for that.
This is one of the things, and this is why we love you, Johnny Jett. There's a lot about travel that you would like to know before you go. And there isn't an easy way to learn this. You know, it's, for instance, I'm looking for somewhere to stay. We really enjoyed Cancun last Christmas, but we don't want to go to the West Coast. We wanted to go somewhere on the East Coast of Mexico, but we don't know where. And it would be nice. I guess you should go to johnnyjett.com is what you should do. There's information is imperfect information sharing. It doesn't flow freely. And this is one thing where the internet really can make a big difference. And finding a great site with lots of travel information, johnnyjett.com is the place to go.
Sign up to the newsletter.
Get the new, you have.
I have a daily travel tip and I do a Sunday roundup.
Multiple free.
People who don't want the daily tip.
They're free
in there.
And they're free. And he has Flight Finder, all sorts of free services. It's a really great website. And we're really glad you do it. You still are you going back to the YouTube videos? Are you still doing those? Or?
Yeah, you know what? I haven't done it in a while. My dad was sick. I've just lost interest, but I'm going to bring it back. I feel revigorated and I know my dad, I can hear him in my ear going, get back to work.
Get back to work, John.
Yeah. So
you got work to do. Well, your dad was a great guy. You had a good service for him.
Yeah, we did. We went back 3 weeks ago to New York, Connecticut to give him his funeral. And then, anyway, it's been great. He lived in 94. He lived a great life.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sorry we lost him. But you know what? A lot of the reason he had a great life in the last years was you. You were a great son and did a great
and travel did a lot of it. I mean, I spent my miles. And I always tell people, if you have a lot of miles, use them on the ones you love and show them the world and do it in style. Fly them first class.
I love it. Johnny Jett, johnnyjett.com. It's so great to see you again, John.
You too. You too. Take care.
Have a wonderful month. We'll see you next month. We're going to get all the regulars from the radio show on at least once a month. So Johnny will join us next month around this time. What is that? First Sunday in...
It's like June 3rd.
Yeah,
June 3rd,
first Sunday of the month. Every first Sunday, Johnny Jett. Thank you, John.
Thank you. Take care.
Safe travels.
And thank
condolences
you.
On your dad. They're saying that thank in the chat room as well.
Thank you.
And find me a house in Rome where I can go for a month with good internet and pizza nearby. Okay. Well, I have emails galore. First off... writes Dan J.H., I have to compliment Micah on doing a fantastic job when Leo is on vacation. I agree. I hope you feel the same when Micah's on vacation. The special co-hosts were an excellent addition. I enjoyed hearing their input. My question, this is really a good one for home theater geek Scott Wilkinson, but maybe John, you and I can do it, because it's concerning remotes and Sonos. And Jammer B is a big Sonos fan, both of us. Longtime Sonos owners. I currently have a 60-inch Samsung Series plasma television with a Sonos Play Bar. The only other device is hooked up to the TV, a cable box, Fire Stick. Both remotes have been set up and paired through the Sonos app to control the volume. Oh, this is a eternal quest of the Play Bar. Now, this works when playing music, but as soon as the TV is on, I'm no longer able to adjust the volume, but either have to control it through the Sonos app or the slide volume buttons. Or the side, rather, side, the physical volume buttons. I've tested this multiple times. As soon as I turn the TV off, the remotes work again. He says, I've read that plasma can possibly interfere with the IR sensor in the Sonos. I don't think that's it. Is there anything I can do to prevent this so the remotes will work when the television is in use? It could be. I mean, but I don't think that that's the issue, Dan. I think what's happening is the TV is sending a signal to the Sonos. I'll take it from here. And as soon as the Sonos is no longer is being controlled by the TV. So a couple of questions I would ask if it weren't an email is, can you control the Sonos volume with a TV remote while the TV's on? In other words, when you turn up the volume on the TV, does the TV speaker go up or does the Sonos go up? I'm going to bet the TV speaker goes up, not the Sonos, because I'm thinking, now this is an older TV, plasma TVs, of course, that means they're at least 5 years old. So it may be not able to do this, but usually in the TV settings, you could say, I am not using your TV speakers. I'm using an external system and I want to control the external system. If you've set it up that way, then the TV remote should turn up the Sonos. And I can't see any reason why the Sonos remote wouldn't work either. Now, it is possible that the Sonos is configured so that if it sees a TV remote controlling it, that it says, well, you're not going to use me. It doesn't want to be confused or use two different remotes. This comes up for me a lot with the Apple TV. In fact, nowadays, most devices like the Fire Stick also will try to be intelligent so that you can use the streamer device, in this case, the Apple remote control, to turn up the volume. And they try to be intelligent about, well, what does that even mean? Apple forgets from time to time. I periodically get a notice from my Apple TV. Your remote hasn't been configured. Do you want to configure it now? No, I'm watching the movie and it's working fine. So that's a bug. But it points to the complicated nature of this, which is, you've got a confusing situation where there are different devices that can turn the sound up and down. There are even different speakers. There's a TV speaker, the Sonos speakers. And it's a question really of just getting the configuration right. In general, you can do what you want to do. In general, you can set it up so that your Sonos remote will work. But I think you're going to have to go into the TV settings. And you're going to have to tell the TV, use the external speakers and control the external speakers, not the internal speakers. I'm just looking to see if anybody in our chat room has any suggestions or the Discord. It doesn't look like there's anything additional to add to that. Just checking. Yeah. All right. So... oh, and that's another thing. Yeah, thank you. Guy Social Web. I like your handle, by the way. Guy's Social Web. Says, don't forget ARC. So, again, this may or may not be available in your older TV. Modern TVs on the HDMI, there's one HDMI port designated ARC, audio return channel. This even gets more complicated. I'm going to guess, because it sounds like you have an older Sonos soundbar, that you're connecting the soundbar via optical. That is not ideal. If your soundbar supports HDMI, that's a much broader channel, much more data can go through it. It is always the preferable way to connect a soundbar to a TV if it's available to you. And if it is, you're going to connect the ARC port on your TV to the Sonos. That may be all it takes, because then you're telling the TV, oh, I've got an external device and it's playing sound. The TV may be smart enough to say, oh, fine, we'll let you do it. Or you still may need to go into settings. So if your setup is more modern, I'm guessing because you have a plasma, it's not. If you have an ARC channel and if you have an HDMI port on your Sonos, the older ones did not. The Play 5s, soundbars did not. I think they were optical only. The newer ones, I'm sure, do. Always use, if you can, HDMI, and that may be solving as well. All right. I think we have concluded this episode of Ask the Tech Guys. Micah will be back next week. I hope you're having a great time, Micah, and I hope you're not hearing this, because if you are, then you shouldn't be watching the show. You should be go out and have a great vacation. I thank you all for joining us. I remind you, we love the emails. Thank you to our emailers. We have more. We'll get to next week. We love it even more if you send us a video via email or audio via email that we could play. That way we get to at least hear from you. And, of course, the best way to contact us, call.twit.tv. The email address is atg@twit.tv. And next week, a phone number. So tell all your friends and family a phone number. It'll be more like the radio show. It'll be a lot easier, I think, I hope, to get in, technically anyway. We do the show every Sunday, round about 11 a.m. Pacific. That's 2 p.m. Eastern time. It would be 1800 UTC. I mentioned that so you can watch us live if you want, live.twit.tv. There's live audio and video streams. If you're watching live, you hear me mention it all the time. We've got a great IRC, Internet Relay Chat. All you need is a browser and point it to irc.twit.tv so you can chat along with other people watching live. If you're already a Club Twit member, of course, you know we have our Discord channel. That's open for all the shows. Another good way. I watch both. Especially enjoy the animated GIFs. And may the Sith be with you. after the fact, on-demand versions of this show available. We still use techguylabs.com. You can go there or go to the site directly, twit.tv/ATG, for downloadable audio and video, ad-supported. We also have a link to the YouTube channel. You can watch us there, and you can also subscribe in your favorite podcast player. That way you'll get it automatically the minute it is available. Who's going to be on the show next week besides Micah Sargent? Next week, John Ashley says, who? Sam Abul Samad, our car guy. Well, that'll be a lot of fun. I hope you'll stop by next week. I hope you will call in, too. We look forward to seeing you. Thanks for joining us. I'm Leo Laporte. Have a great geek week. Bye-bye.
It's midweek, and you really want to know even more about the world of technology. So you should check out Tech News Weekly, the show where we talk to and about the people making and breaking the tech news.
It's the biggest news. We talk with the people writing the stories that you're probably reading. We also talk between ourselves about the stories that are getting us even more excited about tech news this week.
So if you're excited, well, then join us. Head to twit.tv/TNW to subscribe.